Recorded Books and RB Digital present A Court of Wings and Ruin by Sarah J. Maas. Narrated by Amanda Lee Cobb. Resand. 2 years before the wall. The buzzing flies and screaming survivors had long since replaced the beating war drums. The killing field was now a tangled sprawl of corpses, human and fairy alike, interrupted only by broken wings jutting toward the gray sky or the occasional bulk of a felled horse. With the heat, despite the heavy cloud cover, the smell would soon be unbearable. Flies already crawled along eyes gazing unblinkingly upward. They didn't differentiate between mortal and immortal flesh. I picked my way across the once grassy plain, marking the banners half buried in mud and gore. It took most of my lingering strength to keep my wings from dragging over corpse and armor. My own power had been depleted well before the carnage had stopped. I'd spent the final hours fighting as the mortals beside me had, with sword and fist and brute, unrelenting focus. We'd held the lines against Ravinia's legions. Hour after hour we'd held the lines, as I had been ordered to do by my father, as I knew I must do. To falter here would have been the killing blow to our already sundering resistance. The keep looming at my back was too valuable to be yielded to the loyalists, not just for its location in the heart of the continent, but for the supplies it guarded. For the forges that smoldered day and night on its western side, toiling to stock our forces. The smoke of those forges now blended with the pyres already being kindled behind me as I kept walking, scanning the faces of the dead. I made a note to dispatch any soldiers who could stomach it to claim weapons from either army. We needed them too desperately to bother with honor, especially since the other side did not bother with it at all. So still. The battlefield was so still, compared with the slaughter and chaos that had finally halted hours ago. The Loyalist army had retreated rather than surrender, leaving their dead for the crows. I edged around a fallen bay gelding, the beautiful beast's eyes still wide with terror, flies crusting his bloodied flank. The rider was twisted beneath it, the man's head partially severed. Not from a sword blow, no. Those brutal gashes were claws. They wouldn't yield easily. The kingdoms and territories they wanted their human slaves would not lose this war unless they had no other choice, and even then. We'd learned the hard way, very early on, that they had no regard for the ancient rules and rites of battle. And for the Fey territories that fought beside mortal warriors, we were to be stomped out like vermin. I waved away a fly that buzzed in my ear, my hand caked with blood, both my own and foreign. I'd always thought death would be some sort of peaceful homecoming, a sweet, sad lullaby to usher me into whatever waited afterward. I crunched down with an armored boot on the flagpole of a loyalist standard-bearer, smearing red mud across the tusked boar embroidered on his emerald flag. I now wondered if the lullaby of death was not a lovely song, but the droning of flies. If flies and maggots were all death's handmaidens. The battlefield stretched toward the horizon in every direction, save the keep at my back. 3 days. We had held them off. 3 days we had fought and died here. But we'd held the lines. Again and again, I'd rallied human and fairy, had refused to let the loyalists break through. Even when they hammered our vulnerable right flank with fresh troops on the second day. I'd used my power until it was nothing but smoke in my veins, and then I'd used my Illyrian training until swinging my shield and sword was all I knew, all I could manage against the hordes. A half-shredded Illyrian wing jutted from a cluster of high fey corpses, as if it had taken all 6 of them to bring the warrior down, as if he'd taken them all out with him. My heartbeat pounded through my battered body as I hauled away the piled corpses. Reinforcements had arrived at dawn on the third and final day, sent by my father after my plea for aid. I had been too lost in battle rage to note who they were beyond an Illyrian unit, especially when so many had been wielding siphons. But in the hours since they'd saved our asses and turned the tide of the battle, I hadn't spotted either of my brothers amongst the living. Did not know if Cassian or Azrael had even fought on the plain. The latter was unlikely, as my father kept him close for spying, but Cassian. Cassian could have been reassigned. I wouldn't have put it past my father to shift Cassian to a unit most likely to be slaughtered, as this one had been, barely half limping off the battlefield earlier. My aching, bloodied fingers dug into dented armor and clammy, stiff flesh as I heaved away the last of the high fake corpses piled atop the fallen Illyrian soldier. The dark hair, the golden brown skin, the same as Cassian's. But it was not Cassian's death gray face that gaped at the sky. My breath whooshed from me, my lungs still raw from roaring, my lips dry and chapped. I needed water, badly. But nearby, another set of Illyrian wings poked up from the piled dead. I stumbled and lurched toward it, letting my mind drift someplace dark and quiet while I righted the twisted neck to peer at the face beneath the simple helm. Not him. I picked my way through the corpses to another Illyrian, then another, and another. Some I knew, some I didn't. Still, the killing field stretched onward under the sky, mile after mile, a kingdom of the rotting dead. And still, I looked. Part 1. Princess of Carrion. Chapter 1. Feyre. The painting was a lie. A bright, pretty lie, bursting with pale pink blooms and fat beams of sunshine. I'd begun it yesterday, an idle study of the rose garden lurking beyond the open windows of the studio. Through the tangle of thorns and satiny leaves, the brighter green of the hills rolled away into the distance. Incessant, unrelenting spring. If I'd painted this glimpse into the court the way my gut had urged me, it would have been flesh-shredding thorns, flowers that choked off the sunlight for any plant smaller than them, and rolling hills stained red. But each brushstroke on the wide canvas was calculated. Each dab and swirl of blending colors meant to portray not just idyllic spring, but a sunny disposition as well. Not too happy, but gladly, finally healing from horrors I carefully divulged. I supposed that in the past weeks, I'd crafted my demeanor as intricately as one of these paintings. I supposed that if I had also chosen to show myself as I truly wished, I would have been adorned with flesh-shredding talons and hands that choked the life out of those now in my company. I would have left the gilded halls stained red. But not yet. Not yet, I told myself with every brushstroke, with every move I'd made these weeks. Swift revenge helped no one, and nothing but my own roiling rage. Even if every time I spoke to them, I heard Elaine sobbing as she was forced into the cauldron. Even if every time I looked at them, I saw Nesta fling that finger at the King of Highburn in a death promise. Even if every time I scented them, my nostrils were again full of the tang of Cassian's blood, as it pooled on the dark stones of that bone castle. The paintbrush snapped between my fingers. I cleaved it in two, the pale handle damaged beyond repair. Cursing under my breath, I glanced to the windows, the doors. This place was too full of watching eyes to risk throwing it in the rubbish bin. I cast my mind around me like a net, trawling for any other near enough to witness, to be spying. I found none. I held my hands before me, one half of the brush in each palm. For a moment, I let myself see past the glamour that concealed the tattoo on my right hand and forearm, the markings of my true heart, my true title, High Lady of the Night Court. Half a thought had the broken paintbrush going up in flames. The fire did not burn me, even as it devoured wood and brush and paint. When it was nothing but smoke and ash, I invited in a wind that swept them from my palms and out the open windows. For good measure, I summoned a breeze from the garden to snake through the room, wiping away any lingering tendril of smoke, filling it with the musty, suffocating smell of roses. Perhaps when my task here was done, I'd burn this manor to the ground too, starting with those roses. Two approaching presences tapped against the back of my mind, and I snatched up another brush, dipping it in the closest swirl of paint, and lowered the invisible, dark snares I'd erected around this room to alert me of any visitors. I was working on the way the sunlight illuminated the delicate veins in a rose petal, trying not to think of how I'd once seen it do the same to Illyrian wings, when the doors opened. I made a good show of appearing lost in my work, hunching my shoulders a bit, angling my head, and made an even better show of slowly looking over my shoulder, as if the struggle to part myself from the painting was a true effort. But the battle was the smile I forced to my mouth. To my eyes, the real tell of a smile's genuine nature. I practiced in the mirror, over and over. So my eyes easily crinkled as I gave a subdued yet happy smile to Tamlin. To Lucian.
Sorry to interrupt,
Tamlin said, scanning my face for any sign of the shadows I remembered to occasionally fall prey to, the ones I wielded to keep him at bay when the sun sank beyond those foothills.
But I thought you might want to get ready for the meeting.
I made myself swallow, lower the paintbrush. No more than the nervous, unsure girl I'd been long ago. Is... you talked it over with Ianthe? She's truly coming? I hadn't seen her yet. The High Priestess who had betrayed my sisters to Highburn, betrayed us to Highburn. And even if Rhysand's murky, swift reports through the mating bond had soothed some of my dread and terror, she was responsible for it, what had happened weeks ago. It was Lucian who answered, studying my painting as if it held the proof I knew he was searching for.
Yes, she had her reasons. She's willing to explain them to you.
Perhaps along with her reasons for laying her hands on whatever males she pleased, whether they wished her to or not, for doing it to Rhys and Lucian. I wondered what Lucian truly made of it, and the fact that the collateral in her friendship with Highburn had wound up being his mate, Elaine. We hadn't spoken of Elaine save for once, the day after I'd returned. Despite what Geryon implied regarding how my sisters will be treated by Rhysand, I had told him, despite what the Night Court is like, they won't hurt Elaine or Nesta like that, not yet. Rhysand has more creative ways to harm them. Lucian still seemed to doubt it. But then again, I had also implied in my own gaps of memory that perhaps I had not received the same creativity or courtesy. That they believed it so easily, that they thought Rhysand would ever force someone, I added the insult to the long, long list of things to repay them for. I set down the brush and pulled off the paint-flecked smock, carefully laying it on the stool I'd been perched on for 2 hours now. I'll go change, I murmured, flicking my loose braid over a shoulder. Tamlin nodded, monitoring my every movement as I neared them.
The painting looks beautiful.
It's nowhere near done, I said, dredging up that girl who had shunned praise and compliments, who had wanted to go unnoticed. It's still a mess. Frankly, it was some of my best work,
even if its soullessness was only apparent to me.
I think we all are,
Tamlin offered with a tentative smile. I reined in the urge to roll my eyes and returned his smile, brushing my hand over his shoulder as I passed. Lucian was waiting outside my new bedroom when I emerged 10 minutes later. It had taken me 2 days to stop going to the old one, to turn right at the top of the stairs and not left, but there was nothing in that old bedroom. I'd looked into it once, the day after I returned. Shattered furniture, shredded bedding, clothes strewn about as if he'd gone looking for me inside the armoire. No one, it seemed, had been allowed in to clean. But it was the vines, the thorns, that had made it unlivable. My old bedroom had been overrun with them. They'd curved and slithered over the walls, entwined themselves among the debris, as if they'd crawled off the trellises beneath my windows, as if 100 years had passed and not months. That bedroom was now a tomb. I gathered the soft pink skirts of my gauzy dress in hand and shut the bedroom door behind me. Lucian remained leaning against the door across from mine. His room. I didn't doubt he'd ensured I now stayed across from him. Didn't doubt that the metal eye he possessed was always turned toward my own chambers, even while he slept.
I'm surprised you're so calm, given your promises in Highburn,
Lucian said by way of greeting. The promise I'd made to kill the human queens, the king of Highburn, Jurian, and Ianthe for what they'd done to my sisters, to my friends.
You yourself said Ianthe had her reasons. Furious as I might be, I can hear her out. I had not told Lucian of what I knew regarding her true nature. It would mean explaining that Rhys had thrown her out of his own home, that Rhys had done it to defend himself and the members of his court, and it would raise too many questions, undermine too many carefully crafted lies that had kept him and his court, my court, safe. Though I wondered if, after Valaris, it was even necessary. Our enemies knew of the city, knew it was a place of good and peace, and had tried to destroy it at the first opportunity. The guilt for the attack on Valaris after Rhys had revealed it to those human queens would haunt my mate for the rest of our immortal lives.
She's going to spin a story that you'll want to hear,
Lucian warned. I shrugged, heading down the carpeted, empty hall. I can decide for myself, though it sounds like you've already chosen not to believe her. He fell into step beside me.
She dragged 2 innocent women into this.
She was working to ensure Highburn's alliance held strong. Lucian halted me with a hand around my elbow. I allowed it because not allowing it, winnowing the way I'd done in the woods those months ago, or using an Illyrian defensive maneuver to knock him on his ass, would ruin my ruse.
You're smarter than that.
I studied the broad, tan hand wrapped around my elbow. Then I met 1 eye of russet and 1 of whirling gold. Lucian breathed.
Where is he keeping her?
I knew who he meant. I shook my head. I don't know. Rosand has 100 places where they could be, but I doubt he'd use any of them to hide Elaine, knowing that I'm aware of them.
Tell me anyway. List all of them.
You'll die the moment you set foot in his territory.
I survived well enough when I found you.
You couldn't see that he had me in thrall. You let him take me back.
Lie, lie, lie.
But the hurt and guilt I expected weren't there. Lucian slowly released his grip.
I need to find her.
You don't even know, Elaine. The mating bond is just a physical reaction overriding your good sense.
Is that what it did to you and Rhys?
A quiet, dangerous question.
But I made fear enter my eyes, let myself drag up memories of the weaver, the carver, the Midengard worm, so that old terror drenched my scent. I don't want to talk about that, I said, my voice a rasping wobble. A clock chimed on the main level.
I sent a silent prayer of thanks to the mother and launched into a quick walk.
We'll be late. Lucian only nodded, but I felt his gaze on my back, fixed right on my spine as I headed downstairs to see Ianthe. And at last decide how I was going to shred her into pieces. The High Priestess looked exactly as I remembered, both in those memories Rhys had shown me and in my own daydreamings of using the talons hidden beneath my nails to carve out her eyes, then her tongue, then open up her throat. My rage had become a living thing inside my chest, an echoing heartbeat that soothed me to sleep and stirred me to waking. I quieted it as I stared at Ianthe across the formal dining table, Tamlin and Lucian flanking me. She still wore the pale hood and silver circlet set with its limpid blue stone. Like a siphon, the jewel in its center reminded me of Azriel's and Cassian's siphons, and I wondered if, like the Illyrian warriors, the jewel somehow helped shape an unwieldy gift of magic into something more refined, deadlier. She had never removed it. But then again, I had never seen Ianthe summon any greater power than igniting a ball of phalite in a room. The High Priestess lowered her teal eyes to the dark wood table, the hood casting shadows on her perfect face. I wish to begin by saying how truly sorry I am. I acted out of a desire to grant what I believed you perhaps yearned for but did not dare voice, while also keeping our allies in Highburn satisfied with our allegiance. Pretty poisoned lies, but finding her true motive. I'd been waiting these weeks for this meeting, had spent these weeks pretending to convalesce, pretending to heal from the horrors I'd survived at Rhysand's hands. Why would I ever wish for my sisters to endure that? My voice came out trembling, cold. Ianthe lifted her head, scanning my unsure, if not a bit aloof, face. So you could be with them forever. And if Lucian had discovered that Elaine was his mate beforehand, it would have been devastating to realize he'd only have a few decades. The sound of Elaine's name on her lips sent a snarl rumbling up my throat, but I leashed it, falling into that mask of pained quiet, the newest in my arsenal. Lucian answered, If you expect our gratitude, you'll be waiting a while, Ianthe. Tamlin shot him a warning look, both at the words and the tone. Perhaps Lucian would kill Ianthe before I had the chance, just for the horror she'd put his mate through that day. No, Ianthe breathed, eyes wide, the perfect picture of remorse and guilt. No, I don't expect gratitude in the least, or forgiveness, but understanding. This is my home, too. She lifted a slender hand clad in silver rings and bracelets to encompass the room, the manor. We have all had to make alliances we didn't believe we'd ever forge. Perhaps unsavory ones, yes, but Highburn's force is too great to stop. It now can only be weathered like any other storm. A glance toward Tamlin. We have worked so hard to prepare ourselves for Highburn's inevitable arrival. All these months, I made a grave mistake, and I will always regret any pain I caused, but let us continue this good work together. Let us find a way to ensure our lands and people survive.
At the cost of how many others? Lucian demanded. Again that warning look from Tamlin, but Lucian ignored him. What I saw in Highburn, Lucian said, gripping the arms of his chair hard enough that the carved wood groaned.
Any promises he made of peace and immunity?
He halted, as if remembering that Ianthe might very well feed this back to the king. He loosened his grip on the chair, his long fingers flexing before settling on the arms again.
We have to be careful.
We will be,
Tamlin promised.
But we've already agreed to certain conditions,
sacrifices. If we break apart now, even with Hybern as our ally, we have to present a solid front, together.
He still trusted her. Still thought that Ianthe had merely made a bad call. Had no idea what lurked beneath the beauty, the clothes, and the pious incantations. But then again, that same blindness kept him from realizing what prowled beneath my skin as well.
Ianthe bowed her head again.
I will endeavor to be worthy of my friends.
Lucian seemed to be trying very, very hard not to roll his eyes. But Tamlin said,
We'll all try.
That was his new favorite word. Try. I only swallowed, making sure he heard it, and nodded slowly, keeping my eyes on Ianthe.
Don't ever do anything like that again.
A fool's command, one she'd expected me to make, from the quickness with which she nodded. Lucian leaned back in his seat, refusing to say anything else.
Lucian is right, though, I blurted, the portrait of concern. What of the people in this court during this conflict?
I frowned at Tamlin.
They were brutalized by Amarantha. I'm not sure how well they will endure living beside Hybern. They have suffered enough.
Tamlin's jaw tightened. Hybern has promised that our people shall remain untouched and undisturbed.
Our people, I nearly scowled, even as I nodded again in understanding.
It was part of our bargain.
When he'd sold out all of Prithian, sold out everything decent and good in himself to retrieve me,
our people will be safe when Hybern arrives, though I've sent out word that families should relocate to the eastern part of the territory, for the time being.
Good. At least he'd considered those potential casualties. At least he cared that much about his people, understood what sorts of sick games Hybern liked to play, and that he might swear one thing but mean another.
If he was already moving those most at risk during this conflict out of the way.
It made my work here all the easier. And East, a bit of information I tucked away. If East was safe, then the West.
Hybern would indeed be coming from that direction, arriving there.
Tamlin blew out a breath. That brings me to the other reason behind this meeting. I braced myself, schooling my face into bland curiosity as he declared,
The first delegation from Hybern arrives tomorrow.
Lucian's golden skin paled.
Tamlin added,
Jurian will be here by noon.
Chapter 2 I'd barely heard a whisper of Jurian these past weeks. Hadn't seen the resurrected human commander since that night in Hybern. Jurian had been reborn through the cauldron using the hideous remnants of him that Amarantha had hoarded as trophies for 500 years, his soul trapped and aware within his own magically preserved eye. He was mad. Had gone mad long before the king of Hybern had resurrected him to lead the human queens down a path of ignorant submission. Tamlin and Lucian had to know. Had to have seen that gleam in Jurian's eyes. But they also didn't seem to entirely mind that the king of Hybern possessed the cauldron, that it was capable of cleaving this world apart, starting with the wall. The only thing standing between the gathering, lethal Fey armies and the vulnerable human lands below. No, that threat certainly didn't seem to keep Lucian or Tamlin awake at night, or from inviting these monsters into their home.
Tamlin had promised, upon my return, that I was to be included in the planning, in every meeting. And he was true to his word when he explained that Jurian would arrive with two other commanders from Highburn, and I would be present for it. They indeed wished to survey the wall, to test for the perfect spot to rend it once the cauldron had recovered its strength. Turning my sisters into fey, apparently, had drained it. My smugness at the fact was short-lived. My first task, learn where they planned to strike, and how long the cauldron required to return to its full capacity, and then smuggle that information to Rhysand and the others. I took extra care dressing the next day. After sleeping fitfully, thanks to a dinner with a guilt-ridden Ianthe, who went to excessive lengths to kiss my ass and Lucian's. The priestess apparently wished to wait until the Highburn commanders were settled before making her appearance. She cooed about wanting to ensure that they had the chance to get to know us before she intruded, but one look at Lucian told me that he and I, for once, agreed. She'd likely planned some sort of grand entrance. It made little difference to me, to my plans. Plans that I sent down the mating bond the next morning. Words and images tumbling along a night-filled corridor. I did not dare risk using the bond too often. I'd communicated with Rhysand only once since I'd arrived. Just once, in the hours after I'd walked into my old bedroom and spied the thorns that had conquered it. It had been like shouting across a great distance, like speaking underwater. I am safe and well, I'd fired down the bond. I'll tell you what I know soon. I'd waited, letting the words travel into the dark. Then I'd asked, are they alive? Hurt? I didn't remember the bond between us being so hard to hear. Even when I dwelled on this estate, and he'd used it to see if I was still breathing, to make sure my despair hadn't swallowed me whole. But Rhysand's response had come a minute later. I love you. They are alive. They are healing. That was it. As if it was all that he could manage. I had drifted back to my new chambers, locked the door, and enveloped the entire place in a wall of hard air to keep any scent from my silent tears escaping as I curled up in a corner of the bathing room. I had once sat in such a position, watching the stars during the long, bleak hours of the night. Now I took in the cloudless blue sky beyond the open window, listened to the birds singing to one another, and wanted to roar. I hadn't dared to ask for more details about Cassian and Azrael, or my sisters, in terror of knowing just how bad it had been, and what I'd do if their healing turned grim. What I'd bring down upon these people. Healing. Alive and healing. I reminded myself of that every day. Even when I still heard their screams, smelled their blood. But I did not ask for more. Did not risk touching the bond beyond that first time. I didn't know if someone could monitor such things, the silent messages between mates, not when the mating bond could be scented, and I was playing such a dangerous game with it. Everyone believed it had been severed, that Rhys's lingering scent was because he'd forced me, had planted that scent in me. They believed that with time, with distance, his scent would fade. Weeks or months, likely. And when it didn't fade, when it remained, that's when I'd have to strike, with or without the information I needed. But out of the possibility that communicating down the bond kept its scent strong, I had to minimize how much I used it. Even if not talking to Rhys, not hearing that amusement and cunning. I would hear those things again, I promised myself over and over. See that wry smile. And I was again thinking of how pained that face had been the last time I'd seen it, thinking of Rhys, covered in Azrael's and Cassian's blood, as Jurian and the two Highburn commanders winnowed into the gravel of the front drive the next day. Jurian was in the same light leather armor, his brown hair whipping across his face in the blustery spring breeze. He spied us standing on the white marble steps into the house, and his mouth curled in that crooked, smug smile. I willed ice into my veins, the coldness from a court I had never set foot in. But I wielded its master's gift on myself, turning burning rage into frozen calm as Jurian swaggered toward us, a hand on the hilt of his sword. But it was the two commanders, one male, one female, that had a sliver of true fear sliding into my heart. High fey in appearance, their skin the same ruddy hue and hair the identical inky black as their king. But it was their vacant, unfeeling faces that snagged the eye. A lack of emotion, honed from millennia of cruelty. Tamlin and Lucian had gone rigid by the time Jurian halted at the foot of the sweeping front stairs. The human commander smirked.
You're looking better than the last time I saw you.
I dragged my eyes to his and said nothing. Jurian snorted and gestured the two commanders forward.
May I present their highnesses, Prince Dagdon and Princess Branna, nephew and niece to the King of Highburn.
Twins. Perhaps linked in power and mental bonds as well. Tamlin seemed to remember that these were now his allies and marched down the stairs. Lucian followed.
He'd sold us out. Sold out Prithian. For me, to get me back.
Smoke curled in my mouth. I willed frost to fill it again. Tamlin inclined his head to the prince and princess.
Welcome to my home. We have rooms prepared for all of you.
My brother and I shall reside in one together, the princess said.
Her voice was deceptively light, almost girlish. The utter lack of feeling, the utter authority, was anything but. I could practically feel the snide remark simmering in Lucian. But I stepped down the stairs and said, ever the lady of the house, that these people, that Tamlin, had once expected me to gladly embrace,
we can easily make adjustments.
Lucian's metal eye whirred and narrowed on me, but I kept my face impassive as I curtsied to them. To my enemy. Which of my friends would face them on the battlefield? Would Cassian and Azrael have even healed enough to fight? Let alone lift a sword? I did not allow myself to dwell on it, on how Cassian had screamed as his wings had been shredded. Princess Branna surveyed me, the rose-colored dress, the hair that Alice had curled and braided over the top of my head in a coronet, the pale pink pearls at my ears. A harmless, lovely package, perfect for a high lord to mount whenever he wished. Branna's lip curled as she glanced at her brother. The prince deemed the same thing, judging by his answering sneer. Tamlin snarled softly in warning.
If you're done staring at her, perhaps we can move on to the business between us.
Jurian let out a low chuckle and strode up the stairs without being given leave to do so.
They're curious.
Lucian stiffened at the impudence of the gesture, the words.
It's not every century that the contested possession of a female launches a war, especially a female with such talents.
I only turned on a heel and stalked up the steps after him. Perhaps if you'd bothered going to war over Miriam, she wouldn't have left you for Prince Draken. A ripple seemed to go through Jurian. Tamlin and Lucian tensed at my back, torn between monitoring our exchange and escorting the two Highburn royals into the house. Upon my own explanation that Azrael and his network of spies were well trained, we'd cleared any unnecessary servants, wary of spying ears and eyes. Only the most trusted among them remained. Of course, I'd forgotten to mention that I knew Azrael had pulled his spies weeks ago,
the information not worth the cost of their lives, or that it served my own purposes to have fewer people watching me. Jurian halted at the top of the stairs, his face a mask of cruel death as I took the last steps to him.
Careful what you say, girl.
I smiled, breezing past.
Or what? You'll throw me in the cauldron.
I strode between the front doors, edging around the table in the heart of the entry hall, its towering vase of flowers arching to meet the crystal chandelier. Right there, just a few feet away, I had crumpled into a ball of terror and despair all those months ago. Right there, in the center of the foyer, Moore had picked me up and carried me out of this house and into freedom.
Here's the first rule of this visit, I said to Jurian over my shoulder as I headed for the dining room where lunch awaited. Don't threaten me in my own home.
The posturing, I knew a moment later, had worked. Not on Jurian, who glowered as he claimed a seat at the table, but on Tamlin, who brushed a knuckle over my cheek as he passed by, unaware of how carefully I had chosen the words, how I had baited Jurian to serve up the opportunity on a platter. That was my first step. Make Tamlin believe, truly believe, that I loved him and this place, and everyone in it, so that he wouldn't suspect when I turned them on each other. Prince Dagdan yielded to his twin's every wish and order, as if he were the blade she wielded to slice through the world. He poured her drinks, sniffing them first. He selected the finest cuts of meat from the platters and neatly arranged them on her plate. He always let her answer, and never so much as looked at her with doubt in his eyes. One soul in two bodies. And from the way they glanced to each other in wordless exchanges, I wondered if they were perhaps like me. Damati. My mental shields had been a wall of black adamant since arriving, but as we dined, beats of silence going on longer than conversation, I found myself checking them over and over.
We will set out for the wall tomorrow, Branna was saying to Tamlin, more of an order than a request. Jurian will accompany us. We require the use of sentries who know where the holes in it are located.
The thought of them so close to the human lands. But my sisters were not there. No, my sisters were somewhere in the vast territory of my own court, protected by my friends. Even if my father would return home from his business dealings on the continent in a matter of a month or two, I still hadn't figured out how I'd tell him.
Lucian and I can escort you, I offered.
Tamlin whipped his head to me. I waited for the refusal, the shutdown. But it seemed the High Lord had indeed learned his lesson, was indeed willing to try, as he merely gestured to Lucian.
My emissary knows the wall as well as any sentry.
You are letting them do this. You are rationally allowing them to bring down that wall and prey upon the humans on the other side. The words tangled and hissed in my mouth. But I made myself give Tamlin a slow, if not slightly displeased, nod. He knew I'd never be happy about it. The girl he believed had been returned to him would always seek to protect her mortal homeland. Yet he thought I'd stomach it for him, for us, that Highburn wouldn't feast on the humans once that wall came down, that we'd merely absorb them into our territory. We'll leave after breakfast, I told the princess, and I added to Tamlin, with a few sentries as well. His shoulders loosened at that. I wondered if he'd heard how I'd defended Valaris, that I'd protected the rainbow against a legion of beasts like the Adder, that I'd slaughtered the Adder brutally, cruelly, for what it had done to me and mine. Jurian surveyed Lucian with a warrior's frankness.
I always wondered who made that eye after she carved it out.
We did not speak of Amarantha here. We had never allowed her presence into this house. And it had stifled me for those months I'd lived here after Under the Mountain, killed me day by day to shove those fears and pain down deep. For a heartbeat, I weighed who I had been with who I was now supposed to be. Slowly healing, emerging back into the girl Tamlin had fed and sheltered and loved before Amarantha had snapped my neck after 3 months of torture. So I shifted in my seat, studied the table. Lucian merely leveled a hard look at Jurian as the two Highburn royals watched with impassive faces.
I have an old friend at the Dawn Court. She's skilled at tinkering, blending magic and machinery. Tamlin got her to craft it for me at great risk.
A hateful smile from Jurian.
Does your little mate have a rival?
My mate is none of your concern. Jurian shrugged.
She shouldn't be any of yours either, considering she's probably been fucked by half the Illyrian army by now.
I was fairly certain that only centuries of training kept Lucian from leaping over the table to rip out Jurian's throat. But it was Tamlin's snarl that rattled the glasses.
You will behave as a proper guest, Jurian, or you will sleep in the stables like the other beasts.
Jurian merely sipped from his wine.
Why should I be punished for stating the truth? Neither of you were in the war when my forces allied with the Illyrian brutes.
A sidelong glance at the two Highburn royals.
I suppose you two had the delight of fighting against them.
We kept the wings of their generals and lords as trophies, Dagdon said with a small smile.
It took every bit of concentration not to glance at Tamlin, not to demand the whereabouts of the two sets of wings his father had kept as trophies after he'd butchered Rhysand's mother and sister. Pinned in the study, Rhys had said. But I hadn't spotted any trace when I'd gone hunting for them upon returning here, feigning exploration out of sheer boredom on a rainy day. The cellars had yielded nothing either. No trunks or crates or locked rooms containing those wings. The two bites of roasted lamb I'd forced down now rebelled against me. But at least any hint of disgust was a fair reaction to what the Highburn prince had claimed. Jurian indeed smiled at me as he sliced his lamb into little pieces.
You know that we fought together, don't you? Me and your High Lord. Held the lines against the loyalists, battled side by side until Gore was up to our shins.
He is not her High Lord,
Tamlin said with unnerving softness. Jurian only purred at me.
He must have told you where he hid Miriam and Draken.
They're dead, I said flatly.
The cauldron says otherwise.
Cold fear settled into my gut. He'd tried it already, to resurrect Miriam for himself, and had found that she was not amongst the deceased. I was told they were dead, I said again, trying to sound bored, impatient. I took a bite of my lamb, so bland compared to my wealth of spices in Valaris.
I'd think you'd have better things to do, Jurian, than obsess over the lover who jilted you.
His eyes gleamed, bright with 5 centuries of madness, as he skewered a morsel of meat with his fork.
They say you were fucking Rhysand before you ever jilted your own lover.
That is enough,
Tamlin growled. But I felt it then. The tap against my mind, saw their plan, clear and simple. Rile us, distract us, while the two quiet royals slid into our minds. Mine was shielded, but Lucian's, Tamlin's. I reached out with my night-kissed power, casting it like a net, and found 2 oily tendrils spearing for Lucian's and Tamlin's minds, as if they were indeed javelins thrown across the table. I struck. Dagdon and Branna jolted back in their seats, as if I'd landed a physical blow, while their powers slammed into a barrier of black adamant around Lucian's and Tamlin's minds. They shot their dark eyes toward me. I held each of their gazes.
"What's wrong?"
Tamlin asked, and I realized how quiet it had become. I made a good show of furrowing my brow in confusion. "Nothing." I offered a sweet smile to the two royals. "Their highnesses must be tired after a long journey." And for good measure, I lunged for their own minds, finding a wall of white bone. They flinched as I dragged black talons down their mental shields, gouging deep. The warning blow cost me, a low, pulsing headache forming around my temples, but I merely dug back into my food, ignoring Jurian's wink. No one spoke for the rest of the meal. Chapter 3 The spring woods fell silent as we rode between the budding trees, birds and small furred beasts having darted for cover long before we passed. Not for me or Lucian, or the three sentries trailing a respectful distance behind, but from Jurian and the two Highburn commanders who rode in the center of our party, as if they were as awful as the bogey, as the Naga. We reached the wall without incident, or Jurian trying to bait us into distraction. I'd been awake most of the night, casting my awareness through the manor, hunting for any sign that Dagdan and Branna were working their Daemati influence on anyone else. Mercifully, the curse-breaking ability I'd inherited from Helion's Spellcleaver, High Lord of the Day Court, had detected no tangles, no spells, save for the wards around the house itself, preventing anyone from winnowing in or out. Tamlin had been tense at breakfast, but hadn't asked me to remain behind. I'd even gone so far as to test him by asking what was wrong, to which he'd only replied that he had a headache. Lucian had just patted him on the shoulder and promised to look after me. I'd nearly laughed at the words. But laughter was now far from my lips as the wall pulsed and throbbed, a heavy, hideous presence that loomed from half a mile away. Up close, though, even our horses were skittish, tossing their heads and stomping their hooves on the mossy earth as we tied them to the low-hanging branches of blooming dogwoods. "The gap in the wall is right up here," Lucian was saying, sounding about as thrilled as me to be in such company. Stomping over the fallen pink blossoms, Dagdan and Branna slid into step beside him, Jurian slithering off to survey the terrain, the sentries remaining with our mounts. I followed Lucian and the royals, keeping a casual distance behind. I knew my elegant, fine clothes weren't fooling the prince and princess into forgetting that a fellow Daemati now walked at their backs, but I'd still carefully selected the embroidered sapphire jacket and brown pants, adorned only with the jeweled knife and belt that Lucian had once gifted me. A lifetime ago. "Who cleaved the wall here?" Branna asked, surveying the hole that we could not see. No, the wall itself was utterly invisible, but rather felt, as if the air had been sucked from one spot.
"We don't know," Lucian replied,
the dappled sunlight glinting along the gold thread adorning his fawn brown jacket as he crossed his arms.
"Some of the holes just appeared over the centuries. This one is barely wide enough for one person to get through."
An exchanged glance between the twins. I came up behind them, studying the gap, the wall around it that made every instinct recoil at its wrongness. "This is where I came through, that first time." Lucian nodded, and the other two lifted their brows. But I took a step closer to Lucian, my arm nearly brushing his, letting him be a barrier between us. They'd been more careful at breakfast this morning about pushing against my mental shields, yet now, letting them think I was physically cowed by them. Branna studied how closely I stood to Lucian, how he shifted slightly to shield me, too. A little cold smile curled her lips.
How many holes are in the wall?
We've counted three along our entire border, Lucian said tightly. Plus one off the coast, about a mile away.
I didn't let my cool mask falter as he offered up the information. But Branna shook her head, dark hair devouring the sunlight. The sea entrances are of no use. We need to break in on land.
The continent surely has spots, too.
Their queens have an even weaker grasp on their people than you do, Dagdon said. I plucked up that gem of information, studied it. We'll leave you to explore it then, I said, waving toward the hole. When you're done, we'll ride to the next.
It's 2 days from here,
Lucian countered. Then we'll plan a trip for that excursion, I said simply. Before Lucian could object, I asked, and the third hole? Lucian tapped a foot against the mossy ground, but said,
2 days past that.
I turned to the royals, arching a brow. Can both of you winnow? Branna flushed, straightening, but it was Dagdon who admitted,
I can.
He must have carried both Branna and Jurian when they arrived. He added,
only a few miles if I bear others.
I merely nodded and headed toward a tangle of stooping dogwoods, Lucian following close behind. When there was nothing but ruffling pink blossoms and trickling sunlight through the thatch of branches, when the royals had busied themselves with the wall, out of sight and sound, I took up a perch on a smooth, bald rock. Lucian sat against a nearby tree, folding one booted ankle over another.
Whatever you're planning, it'll land us knee-deep in shit.
I'm not planning anything. I plucked up a fallen pink blossom and twirled it between my thumb and forefinger. That golden eye narrowed, clicking softly. What do you even see with that thing? He didn't answer. I chucked the blossom onto the soft moss between us. Don't trust me? After all we've been through? He frowned at the discarded blossom, but still said nothing. I busied myself by sorting through my pack until I found the canteen of water. If you'd been alive for the war, I asked him, taking a swig, would you have fought on their side, or fought for the humans?
I would have been part of the Human Fae Alliance.
Even if your father wasn't?
Especially if my father wasn't.
But Baron had been a part of that alliance, if I correctly recalled my lessons with Rhys all those months ago. And yet here you are, ready to march with Highburn.
I did it for you too, you know.
Cold, hard words.
I went with him to get you back.
I never realized what a powerful motivator guilt can be.
That day you went away,
he said, struggling to avoid that other word. Left.
I beat Tamlin back to the manor, received the message when we were out on the border and raced here. But the only trace of you was that ring, melted between the stones of the parlor. I got rid of it a moment before Tam arrived home to see it.
A probing, careful statement of the facts that pointed not toward abduction. They melted it off my finger, I lied. His throat bobbed, but he just shook his head, the sunlight leaking through the forest canopy, setting the ember red of his hair flickering. We sat in silence for minutes. From the rustling and murmuring, the royals were finishing up, and I braced myself, calculating the words I'd need to wield without seeming suspicious. I said quietly, thank you for coming to Highburn to get me. He pulled at the moss beside him, jaw tight.
It was a trap. What I thought we were to do there, it did not turn out that way.
It was an effort not to bare my teeth, but I walked to him, taking up a place at his side against the wide trunk of the tree. This situation is terrible, I said,
and it was the truth.
A low snort. I knocked my knee against his.
Don't let Jurian bait you.
He's doing it to feel out any weakness between us.
I know.
I turned my face to him, resting my knee against his in silent demand.
Why?
I asked. Why does Hybern want to do this beyond some horrible desire for conquest? What drives him? His people? Hatred? Arrogance? Lucian finally looked at me, the intricate pieces and carvings on the metal eye much more dazzling up close.
Do you...
Branna and Dagdon shoved through the bushes, frowning to find us sitting there. But it was Jurian, right on their heels, as if he'd been divulging the details of his surveying, who smiled at the sight of us, knee to knee, and nearly nose to nose.
Careful, Lucian,
the warrior sneered.
You see what happens to males who touch the High Lord's belongings.
Lucian snarled, but I shot him a warning glare. Point proven, I said silently. And despite Jurian, despite the sneering royals, a corner of Lucian's mouth tugged upward. Ianthe was waiting at the stables when we returned. She'd made her grand arrival at the end of breakfast hours before, breezing into the dining room when the sun was shining in shafts of pure gold through the windows. I had no doubt she'd been planning the timing, just as she had planned the stop in the middle of one of those sunbeams, angled so her hair glowed and the jewel atop her head burned with blue fire. I would have titled the painting Model Piety. After she'd been briefly introduced by Tamlin, she'd mostly cooed over Jurian, who had only scowled at her like some insect buzzing in his ear. Dagdon and Branna had listened to her fawning with enough boredom that I was starting to wonder if the two of them perhaps preferred no one's company but each other's, in whatever unholy capacity. Not a blink of interest toward the beauty who often made males and females stop to gape. Perhaps any sort of physical passion had long ago been drained away, alongside their souls. So the Hybern royals and Jurian had tolerated Ianthe for about a minute before they'd found their food more interesting. A slight that no doubt explained why she had decided to meet us here, awaiting our return as we rode in. It was my first time on a horse in months, and I was stiff enough that I could barely move as the party dismounted. I gave Lucian a subtle, pleading look, and he barely hid his smirk as he sauntered over to me. Our dispersing party watched as he braced my waist in his broad hands and easily hefted me off the horse. None more closely than Ianthe. I only patted Lucian on the shoulder in thanks. Ever the courtier, he bowed back. It was hard sometimes to remember to hate him, to remember the game I was already playing. Ianthe trilled. A successful journey, I hope. I jerked my chin toward the royals. They seemed pleased. Indeed, whatever they'd been looking for, they'd found agreeable. I hadn't dared ask too many prying questions. Not yet. Ianthe bowed her head. Thank the cauldron for that.
What do you want?
Lucian said, a shade too flatly. She frowned but lifted her chin, folding her hands before her as she said,
We're to have a party in honor of our guests, and to coincide with the summer solstice in a few days. I wish to speak to Farah about it.
A two-faced smile.
Unless you have an objection to that.
He doesn't, I answered before Lucian could say something he'd regret. Give me an hour to eat and change, and I'll meet you in the study. Perhaps a tinge more assertive than I'd once been, but she nodded all the same. I linked my elbow with Lucian's and steered him away. See you soon, I told her, and felt her gaze on us as we walked from the dim stables and into the bright midday light. His body was taut, near trembling. What happened between you? I hissed when we were lost among the hedges and gravel paths of the garden.
It's not worth repeating.
When I was taken, I ventured, almost stumbling on the word, almost saying left. Did she and Tamlin? I wasn't faking the twisting low in my gut.
No, he said hoarsely. No. When Callan Mai came along, he refused. He flat out refused to participate. I replaced him in the right, but
I'd forgotten. Forgotten about Callan Mai and the right. I did a mental tally of the days. No wonder I'd forgotten. I'd been in that cabin in the mountains, with Reese buried in me. Perhaps we'd generated our own magic that night. But Lucien, you took Ianthe into that cave on Callan Mai? He wouldn't meet my gaze.
She insisted. Tamlin was... Things were bad, Feyre. I went in his stead, and I did my duty to the court. I went of my own free will, and we completed the rite.
No wonder she'd backed off him. She'd gotten what she wanted.
Please, don't tell Elaine, he said. When we find her again,
he amended. He might have completed the great rite with Ianthe of his own free will, but he certainly hadn't enjoyed it. Some line had been blurred. Badly. And my heart shifted a bit in my chest as I said to him, with no guile whatsoever, I won't tell anyone unless you say so. The weight of that jeweled knife and belt seemed to grow. I wish I had been there to stop it. I should have been there to stop it. I meant every word. Lucien squeezed our linked arms as we rounded a hedge, the house rising up before us.
You are a better friend to me, Feyre, he said quietly, than I ever was to you.
Alice frowned at the two dresses hanging from the armoire door, her long brown fingers smoothing over the chiffon and silk.
I don't know if the waist can be taken out, she said without peering back at where I sat on the edge of the bed. We took so much of it in that there's not much fabric left to play with. You might very well need to order new ones.
She faced me then, running an eye over my robed body.
I knew what she saw, what lies and poisoned smiles couldn't hide. I had become wraith-thin while living here after Amarantha, yet for all Reese had done to harm me, I'd gained back the weight I'd lost, put on muscle, and discarded the sickly pallor in favor of sun-kissed skin. For a woman who had been tortured and tormented for months, I looked remarkably well. Our eyes held across the room, the silence hewn only by the humming of the few remaining servants in the hallway, busy with preparations for the solstice tomorrow morning. I'd spent the past 2 days playing the pretty pet, allowed into meetings with the Highburn royals mostly because I remained quiet. They were as cautious as we were, hedging Tamlin and Lucian's questions about the movement of their armies, their foreign allies, and other allies within Prithian. The meetings went nowhere, as all they wanted to know was information about our own forces. And about the Night Court. I fed Dagdon and Branna details both true and false, mixing them together seamlessly. I laid out the Illyrian host amongst the mountains and steppes, but selected the strongest clan as their weakest. I mentioned the efficiency of those blue stones from Highburn against Cassian's and Asriel's power, but failed to mention how easily they'd worked around them. Any questions I couldn't evade? I feigned memory loss, or trauma too great to bear recalling. But for all my lying and maneuvering, the royals were too guarded to reveal much of their own information. And for all my careful expressions, Alice seemed the only one who noted the tiny tells that even I couldn't control.
Do you think there are any gowns that will fit for solstice? I said casually as her silence continued. The pink and green ones fit, but I've worn them thrice already.
You never cared for such things, Alice said, clicking her tongue.
Am I not allowed to change my mind? Those dark eyes narrowed slightly. But Alice yanked open the armoire doors, the dresses swaying with it, and rifled through its dark interior.
You could wear this.
She held up an outfit. A set of turquoise night court clothes, cut so similarly to Amryn's preferred fashion, dangled from her spindly fingers. My heart lurched.
That, why? Words stumbled out of me, bulky and slippery, and I silenced myself with a sharp yank on my inner leash. I straightened. I have never known you to be cruel, Alice. A snort. She chucked the clothes back into the armoire.
Tamlin shredded the other two sets. Missed this one because it was in the wrong drawer.
I wove a mental thread into the hallway to ensure no one was listening. He was upset. I wish he'd destroyed that pair, too.
I was there that day, you know,
Alice said, folding her spindly arms across her chest.
I saw the Morrigan arrive. Saw her reach into that cocoon of power and pick you up like a child. I begged her to take you out.
My swallow wasn't feigned.
I never told him that. Never told any of them. I let them think you'd been abducted. But you clung to her, and she was willing to slaughter all of us for what had happened.
I don't know why you'd assume that. I tugged the edges of my silk robe tighter around me.
Servants talk. And under the mountain, I never heard of or saw Rhysand laying a hand on a servant. Guards, Amarantha's cronies, the people he was ordered to kill, yes, but never the meek. Never those unable to defend themselves.
He's a monster.
They say you came back different. Came back wrong.
A crow's laugh.
I never bothered to tell them I think you came back right. Came back right at last.
The precipice yawned open before me. Lines. There were lines here, and my survival and that of Prithian depended upon navigating them. I rose from my bed, hands shaking slightly.
But then Alice said, My cousin works in the palace at Adriata.
Summer Court. Alice had originally been from the Summer Court and had fled here with her two nephews after her sister had been brutally murdered during Amarantha's reign.
Servants in that palace are not meant to be seen or heard, but they see and hear plenty when no one believes they're present.
She was my friend. She had helped me at great risk under the mountain, had stood by me in the months after, but if she jeopardized everything...
She said you visited, and that you were healthy and laughing and happy.
It was a lie. He made me act that way. The wobble in my voice didn't take much to summon. A knowing, crooked smile.
If you say so.
I do say so. Alice pulled out a dress of creamy white.
You never got to wear this one. I had it ordered for after your wedding day.
It wasn't exactly bride-like, but rather pure, clean. The kind of gown I'd have resented when I returned from under the mountain, desperate to avoid any comparison to my ruined soul, but now. I held Alice's stare and wondered which of my plans she deciphered. Alice whispered,
I will only say this once. Whatever you plan to do, I beg you, leave my boys out of it. Take whatever retribution you desire, but please spare them.
I would never, I almost began. But I only shook my head, nodding my brows, utterly confused and distressed. All I want is to settle back into life here. To heal. Heal the land of the corruption and darkness spreading across it. Alice seemed to understand it too. She set the dress on the armoire door, airing out the loose, shining skirts.
Wear this on solstice, she said quietly.
So I did.
Chapter 4. Summer solstice was exactly as I had remembered. Streamers and ribbons and garlands of flowers everywhere. Casks of ale and wine hauled out to the foothills surrounding the estate. High fae and lesser fairies alike flocking to the celebrations. But what had not existed here a year ago was Ianthe. The celebrating would be sacrilege, she intoned, if we did not give thanks first. So we all were up 2 hours before the dawn, bleary-eyed and none of us too keen to endure her ceremony as the sun crested the horizon on the longest day of the year. I wondered if Tarquin had to weather such tedious rituals in his shining palace by the sea. Wondered what sort of celebrations would occur in Adriata today, with the High Lord of Summer who had come so very close to being a friend. As far as I knew, despite the murmurings between servants, Tarquin still had never sent word to Tamlin about the visit Rhys, Amryn, and I had made. What did the Summer Lord now think of my changed circumstances? I had little doubt Tarquin had heard, and I prayed he stayed out of it until my work here was finished. Alice had found me a luxurious white velvet cloak for the brisk ride into the hills, and Tamlin had lifted me onto a moon-pale mare with wild flowers woven into her silver mane. If I had wanted to paint a picture of serene purity, it would have been the image I cast that morning, my hair braided above my head, a crown of white hawthorn blossoms upon it. I dabbed rouge onto my cheeks and lips, a slight hint of color, like the first blush of spring across a winter landscape. As our procession arrived at the hill, a gathered crowd of hundreds already atop it, all eyes turned to me. But I kept my gaze ahead, to where Ianthe stood, before a rudimentary stone altar bedecked in flowers and the first fruits and grains of summer. The hood was off her pale blue robe for once, the silver circlet now resting directly atop her golden head. I smiled at her, my mare obediently pausing at the northern arc of the half-circle that the crowd had formed around the hill's edge and Ianthe's altar, and wondered if Ianthe could spy the wolf grinning beneath. Tamlin helped me off the horse, the gray light of pre-dawn shimmering along the golden threads in his green jacket. I forced myself to meet his eyes as he set me on the soft grass, aware of every other stare upon us. The memory gleamed in his gaze, and the way his gaze dipped to my mouth. A year ago, he had kissed me on this day. A year ago, I danced amongst these people, carefree and joyous for the first time in my life, and had believed it was the happiest I'd ever been and ever would be. I gave him a little shy smile and took the arm he extended. Together we crossed the grass toward Ianthe's stone altar, the Highburn royals, Jurian, and Lucian trailing behind. I wondered if Tamlin was also remembering another day, all those months ago, when I'd worn a different white gown, when there had also been flowers strewn about, when my mate had rescued me after I'd decided not to go through with the wedding, some fundamental part of me knowing it wasn't right. I'd believed I didn't deserve it, hadn't wanted to burden Tamlin for an eternity with someone as broken as I'd been at the time. And Rhys. Rhys would have let me marry him, believing me to be happy, wanting me to be happy, even if it killed him. But the moment I had said no, he saved me, helped me save myself. I glanced sidelong at Tamlin, but he was studying my hand, braced on his arm, the empty finger where the ring had once perched. What did he make of it? Where did he think that ring had gone if Lucian had hidden the evidence? For a heartbeat, I pitied him. Pitied that not only Lucian had lied to him, but Alice as well. How many others had seen the truth of my suffering and tried to spare him from it? Seen my suffering and done nothing to help me? Tamlin and I paused before the altar,
Ianthe offering us a serene, regal nod. The Highburn royals shifted on their feet, not bothering to hide their impatience. Branna had made barely veiled complaints about the solstice at dinner last night, declaring that in Highburn they didn't bother with such odious things and got on with the revelry, and implying, in her way, that soon neither would we. I ignored the royals as Ianthe lifted her hands and called to the crowd behind us, "A blessed solstice to us all!" Then began an endless string of prayers and rituals, her prettiest young acolytes assisting with the pouring of sacred wine, with the blessing of the harvest goods on the altar, with beseeching the sun to rise. A lovely rehearsed little number. Lucian was half asleep behind me. But I'd gone over the ceremony with Ianthe and knew what was coming when she lifted the sacred wine and intoned, "As the light is strongest today, let it drive out unwanted darkness. Let it banish the black stain of evil." Jab after jab at my mate, my home. But I nodded along with her. "Would Princess Branna and Prince Dagdon do us the honor of imbibing this blessed wine?" The crowd shifted. The Highburn royals blinked, frowning to each other. But I stepped aside, smiling prettily at them and gesturing to the altar. They opened their mouths, no doubt to refuse, but Ianthe would not be denied. "Drink, and let our new allies become new friends," she declared. "Drink and wash away the endless night of the year." The two Daimadi were likely testing that cup for poison through whatever magic and training they possessed, but I kept the bland smile on my face as they finally approached the altar and Branna accepted the outstretched silver cup. They each barely had a sip before they made to step back, but Ianthe cooed at them, insisting they come behind the altar to witness our ceremony at her side. I had made sure she knew precisely how disgusted they were with her rituals, how they would do their best to stomp out her usefulness as a leader of her people once they arrived. She now seemed inclined to convert them. More prayers and rituals, until Tamlin was summoned to the other side of the altar to light a candle for the souls extinguished in the past year, to now bring them back into the light's embrace when the sun rose. Pink began to stain the clouds behind them. Jurian was also called forward to recite one final prayer I'd requested Ianthe add, in honor of the warriors who fought for our safety each day. And then Lucian and I were standing alone in the circle of grass, the altar and horizon before us, the crowd at our backs and sides. From the rigidity of his posture, the dart of his gaze over the sight, I knew he was now running through the prayers and how I had worked with Ianthe on the ceremony, how he and I remained on this side of the line right as the sun was about to break over the world and the others had been maneuvered away. Ianthe stepped toward the hill's edge, her golden hair tumbling freely down her back as she lifted her arms to the sky. The location was intentional, as was the positioning of her arms. She'd made the same gesture on winter solstice, standing in the precise spot where the sun would rise between her upraised arms, filling them with light. Her acolytes had discreetly marked the place in the grass with a carved stone. Slowly, the golden disk of the sun broke over the hazy greens and blues of the horizon. Light filled the world, clear and strong, spearing right for us. Ianthe's back arched, her body a mere vessel for the solstice's light to fill, and what I could see of her face was already limned in pious ecstasy. The sun rose, a held gilded note echoing through the land. The crowd began to murmur, then cry out. Not at Ianthe, but at me. At me, resplendent and pure in white, beginning to glow with the light of day as the sun's path flowed directly over me instead. No one had bothered to confirm or even notice
that Ianthe's marker stone had moved 5 feet to the right, too busy with my parading arrival to spy a phantom wind slide it through the grass. It took Ianthe longer than anyone else to look, to turn to see that the sun's power was not filling her, blessing her. I released the damper on the power that I had unleashed in Highburn, my body turning incandescent as light shone through. Pure as day, pure as starlight.
Cursebreaker, someone murmured. Blessed, others whispered.
I made a show of looking surprised, surprised and yet accepting of the cauldron's choice. Tamlin's face was taut with shock. The Highburn royals, nothing short of baffled. But I turned to Lucian, my light radiating so brightly that it bounced off his metal eye, a friend beseeching another for help. I reached a hand toward him. Beyond us, I could feel Ianthe scrambling to regain control, to find some way to spin it. Perhaps Lucian could too, for he took my hand and then knelt upon one knee in the grass, pressing my fingers to his brow. Like stalks of wheat in a wind, the others fell to their knees as well. For in all of her preening ceremonies and rituals, never had Ianthe revealed any sign of power or blessing.
But Feyre Cursebreaker, who had led Prithian from tyranny and darkness?
Blessed, holy, undimming before evil. I let my glow spread until it too rippled from Lucian's bowed form, a knight before his queen. When I looked to Ianthe and smiled again, I let a little bit of the wolf show. The festivities, at least, remained the same. Once the uproar and awe had ebbed, once my own glow had vanished when the sun crested higher than my head, we made our way to the nearby hills and fields, where those who had not attended the ceremony had already heard about my small miracle. I kept close to Lucian, who was inclined to indulge me, as everyone seemed to be torn between joy and awe, question and concern. Ianthe spent the next 6 hours trying to explain what had happened. The cauldron had blessed her chosen friend, she told whoever would listen. The sun had altered its very path to show how glad it was for my return. Only her acolytes really paid attention, and half of them appeared only mildly interested. Tamlin, however, seemed the wariest, as if the blessing had somehow upset me, as if he remembered that same light in Highburn and couldn't figure out why it disturbed him so. But duty had him fielding thanks and good wishes from his subjects, warriors and the lesser lords, leaving me free to wander. I was stopped every now and then by fervent, adoring fairies who wished to touch my hand, to weep a bit over me. Once I would have cringed and winced. Now I received their thanks and prayers beatifically, thanking them, smiling at them. Some of it was genuine. I had no quarrel with the people of these lands, who had suffered alongside the rest, none. But the courtiers and sentries who sought me out. I put on a better show for them. Cauldron blessed, they called me. An honor, I merely replied. On and on I repeated those words, through breakfast and lunch, until I returned to the house to freshen up and take a moment for myself. In the privacy of my room, I set my crown of flowers on the dressing table and smiled slightly at the eye tattooed into my right palm.
The longest day of the year,
I said into the bond, sending along flickers of all that had occurred atop that hill.
I wish I could spend it with you.
He would have enjoyed my performance, would have laughed himself hoarse afterward at the expression on Ianthe's face. I finished washing up and was about to head out into the hills again when Rhysand's voice filled my mind.
It'd be an honor, he said, laughter in every word, to spend even a moment in the company of Feyre, cauldron blessed.
I chuckled. The words were distant, strained. Keep it quick. I had to keep it quick or risk exposure. And more than anything, I needed to ask to know, is everyone all right? I waited, counting the minutes.
Yes, as well as we can be. When do you come home to me?
Each word was quieter than the last. Soon, I promised him. Highburn is here. I'll be done soon. He didn't reply, and I waited another few minutes before I again donned my flower crown and strode down the stairs. As I emerged into the bedecked garden, though, Risan's faint voice filled my head once more.
I wish I could spend today with you, too.
The words wrapped a fist around my heart, and I forced them from my mind as I returned to the party in the hills, my steps heavier than they'd been when I floated into the house. But lunch had been cleared away, and the dancing had begun. I saw him waiting on the outskirts of one of the circles, observing every move I took. I glanced between the grass and the crowd, and the cluster of musicians coaxing such lively music from drums and fiddles and pipes as I approached, no more than a shy, hesitant doe. Once, those same sounds had shaken me awake, had made me dance and dance. I suppose they were now little more than weapons in my arsenal, as I stopped before Tamlin, lowered my lashes, and asked softly, "Will you dance with me?" Relief, happiness, and a slight edge of concern.
"Yes," he breathed. "Yes, of course."
So I let him lead me into the swift dance, spinning and tilting me, people gathering to cheer and clap, dance after dance after dance, until sweat was running down my back as I worked to keep up, keep that smile on my face, to remember to laugh when my hands were within strangling distance of his throat. The music eventually shifted into something slower, and Tamlin eased us into the melody. When others had found their own partners more interesting to watch, he murmured,
"This morning, are you all right?"
My head snapped up. "Yes, I don't know what that was, but yes. Is Ianthe mad?"
"I don't know." She didn't see it coming. "I don't think she handles surprises very well."
"I should apologize." His eyes flashed.
"What for?" "Perhaps it was a blessing. Magic still surprises me. If she's angry, it's her problem."
I made a show of considering, then nodded, pressed closer, loathing every place where our bodies touched. I didn't know how Rhys had endured it, endured Amarantha, for 5 decades.
"You look beautiful today,"
Tamlin said. "Thank you." I made myself peer up into his face. Lucian told me that you didn't complete the rite at Kalan Mai, that you refused. And you let Ianthe take him into the cave instead.
His throat bobbed. "I couldn't stomach it."
"And yet you could stomach making a deal with Highburn, as if I were a stolen item to be returned." "Maybe this morning was not just a blessing for me," I offered. A stroke of his hand down my back was his only reply. That was all we said for the next 3 dances, until hunger dragged me toward the tables where dinner had now been laid out. I let him fill a plate for me, let him serve me himself as we found a spot under a twisted old oak and watched the dancing and the music. I nearly asked if it was worth it, if giving up this sort of peace was worth it in order to have me back. For Highburn would come here, use these lands, and there would be no more singing and dancing, not once they arrived. But I kept quiet as the sunlight faded and night finally fell. The stars winked into existence, dim and small above the blazing fires. I watched them through the long hours of celebrating, and could have sworn that they kept me company, my silent and stalwart friends. Chapter 5. I crawled back to the manor 2 hours after midnight, too exhausted to last until dawn. Especially when I noted the way Tamlin looked at me, remembering that dawn last year when he'd led me away and kissed me as the sun rose. I asked Lucian to escort me, and he'd been more than happy to do so, given that his own status as a mated male made him uninterested in any sort of female company these days, and given that Ianthe had been trying to corner him all day to ask about what had happened at the ceremony. I changed into my nightgown, a small lacy thing I'd once worn for Tamlin's enjoyment, and now was glad to don thanks to the day's sweat still clinging to my skin, and flopped into bed. For nearly half an hour, I kicked at the sheets, tossing and turning, thrashing. The adder, the weaver, my sisters being thrown into the cauldron, all of them twined and eddied around me. I let them. Most of the others were still celebrating when I yelped, a sharp, short cry that had me bouncing from the bed. My heart thundered along my veins, my bones, as I cracked open the door, sweating and haggard, and padded across the hall. Lucian answered on the second knock. I heard you. What's wrong? He scanned me, russet eye wide as he noted my disheveled hair, my sweaty nightgown. I swallowed, a silent question on my face, and he nodded, retreating into the room to let me inside. Bare from the waist up, he'd managed to haul on a pair of pants before opening the door, and hastily buttoned them as I strode past. His room had been bedecked in autumn court colors, the only tribute to his home he'd ever let show, and I surveyed the night-dark space, the rumpled bedsheets. He perched on the rolled arm of a large chair before the blackened fire, watching me wring my hands in the center of the crimson carpet. I dreamt about it, I rasped. Under the mountain. And when I wake up, I can't remember where I am. I lifted my now unmarred left arm before me. I can't remember when I am. Truth, and half a lie. I still dreamed of those horrible days, but no longer did they consume me. No longer did I run to the bathroom in the middle of the night to hurl my guts up. What did you dream of tonight? He asked quietly. I dragged my eyes to his, haunted and bleak. She had me spiked to the wall, like Claire Bedder. And the adder was... I shuddered, running my hands over my face. Lucian rose, stalking to me. The ripple of fear and pain at my own words masked my scent enough. Masked my own power as my dark snares picked up a slight vibration in the house. Lucian paused half a foot from me. He didn't so much as object as I threw my arms around his neck, burying my face against his warm, bare chest. It was seawater from Tarquin's own gift that slipped from my eyes, down my face, and onto his golden skin. Lucian loosed a heavy sigh and slid an arm around my waist, the other threading through my hair to cradle my head. I'm sorry, he murmured. I'm sorry. He held me, stroking soothing lines down my back, and I calmed my weeping, those saltwater tears drying up like wet sand in the sun. I lifted my head from his sculpted chest at last, my fingers digging into the hard muscles of his shoulders, as I peered into his concerned face. I took deep, heaving breaths, my brows knotting and mouth parting as I...
What's going on?
Lucian whipped his head toward the door. Tamlin stood there, face a mask of cold calm. The beginnings of claws glinted at his knuckles. We pushed away, too swiftly to be casual. I had a nightmare, I explained, straightening my nightgown. I didn't want to wake the house. Tamlin was just staring at Lucian, whose mouth had tightened into a thin line as he marked those claws, still half-drawn. I had a nightmare, I repeated a bit sharply, gripping Tamlin's arm and leading him from the room before Lucian could so much as open his mouth. I closed the door, but could still feel Tamlin's attention fixed on the male behind it. He didn't sheathe his claws. Didn't summon them any further, either. I strode the few feet to my room, watching Tamlin assess the hall, the distance between my door and Lucian's. "Good night," I said, and shut the door in Tamlin's face. I waited the 5 minutes it took Tamlin to decide not to kill Lucian, and then smiled. I wondered if Lucian had pieced it together, that I had known Tamlin would come to my room tonight, after I had given him so many shy touches and glances today, that I had changed into my most indecent nightgown, not for the heat, but so that when my invisible snares in the house informed me that Tamlin had finally worked up the nerve to come to my bedroom, I'd look the part. A feigned nightmare. The evidence set into place with my thrashed sheets. I'd left Lucian's door open, with him too distracted and unsuspecting of why I'd really be there to bother to shut it, or notice the shield of hard air I'd placed around the room so that he wouldn't hear or scent Tamlin as he arrived. Until Tamlin saw us there, limbs entwined, my nightgown askew, staring at each other so intently, so full of emotion that we'd either just been starting or finishing up. That we didn't even notice until Tamlin was right there, and that invisible shield vanished before he could sense it. A nightmare, I'd told Tamlin. I was the nightmare. Preying on what Tamlin had feared from my very first days here. I'd not forgotten that long ago fight he'd picked with Lucian. The warning he'd given him to stop flirting with me, to stay away. The fear that I'd preferred the red-haired lord over him, and that it would threaten every plan he had. "Back off," he'd told Lucian. I had no doubt Tamlin was now running through every look and conversation since then, every time Lucian had intervened on my behalf, both under the mountain and afterward, weighing how much that new mating bond with Elaine held sway over his friend. Considering how this very morning Lucian had knelt before me, swearing fealty to a newborn god as if we had both been cauldron-blessed. I let myself smile for a moment longer, then dressed. There was more work to do. Chapter 6. A set of keys to the estate gates had gone missing. But after last night's incident, Tamlin didn't appear to care. Breakfast was silent, the Highburn royals sullen at being kept waiting so long to see the second cleft in the wall, and Jurian, for once, too tired to do anything but shovel meat and eggs into his hateful mouth. Tamlin and Lucian, it seemed, had spoken before the meal, but the latter made a point to keep a healthy distance from me, to not look at or speak to me, as if still needing to convince Tamlin of our innocence. I debated asking Jurian outright if he'd stolen the keys from whatever guard had lost them, but the silence was a welcome reprieve. Until Ianthe breezed in, carefully avoiding acknowledging me, as if I was indeed the blinding son that had been stolen from her. "I am sorry to interrupt your meal, but there is a matter to discuss, High Lord," Ianthe said, pale robes swirling at her feet as she halted halfway to the table. All of us perked up at that. Tamlin, brooding and snarly, demanded, "What is it?" She made a show of realizing the Highburn royals were present. Listening. I tried not to snort at the oh-so-nervous glance she threw their way, then to Tamlin. The next words were no surprise whatsoever. "Perhaps we should wait until after the meal, when you're alone." No doubt a power play, to remind them that she did in fact have sway here, with Tamlin. That Highburn too might want to remain on her good side, considering the information she bore. But I was cruel enough to say sweetly,
If we can trust our allies in Hybern to go to war with us, then we can trust them to use discretion. Go ahead, Ianthe.
She didn't so much as look in my direction, but now caught between outright insult and politeness. Tamlin weighed our company against Ianthe's posture and said, "Let's hear it."
Her white throat bobbed. There is... My acolytes discovered that the land around my temple is dying.
Jurian rolled his eyes and went back to his bacon.
Then tell the gardeners, Branna said, returning to her own food.
Dagdon snickered into his cup of tea.
It is not a matter of gardening, Ianthe straightened. It is a blight upon the land. Grass, root, bud, all of it, shriveled up and sickly. It reeks of the Naga.
It was an effort not to glance at Lucian, to see if he also noticed the too eager gleam in her eye. Even Tamlin loosed a sigh, as if he saw it for what it was, an attempt to regain some ground, perhaps a scheme to poison the earth and then miraculously heal it.
There are other spots in the woods where things have died and are not coming back, Ianthe went on, pressing a silver-adorned hand to her chest. I fear it's a warning that the Naga are gathering and plan to attack.
Oh, I'd gotten under her skin. I'd been wondering what she'd do after yesterday's solstice, after I'd robbed her of her moment and power. But this... clever. I hid my smirk down deep and said gently, Ianthe, perhaps it is a case for the groundskeepers. She stiffened, at last facing me. You think you're playing the game, I itched to tell her, but you have no idea that every choice you made last night and this morning were only steps I nudged you toward. I jerked my chin toward the royals, then Lucian. We're heading out this afternoon to survey the wall, but if the problem remains when we return in a few days, I'll help you look into it. Those silver-ringed fingers curled into loose fists at her sides. But like the true viper she was, Ianthe said to Tamlin, Will you be joining them, High Lord? She looked to me and Lucian, the assessment too lingering to be casual. A faint, low headache was already forming, made worse with every word out of her mouth. I'd been up too late and had gotten too little sleep, and I needed my strength for the days ahead. He will not, I said, cutting off Tamlin before he could reply. He set down his utensils. I think I will. I don't need an escort. I let him unravel the layers of defensiveness in that statement. Jurian snorted.
Starting to doubt our good intentions, High Lord?
Tamlin snarled at him.
Careful.
I placed a hand flat on the table. I'll be fine with Lucian and the sentries. Lucian seemed inclined to sink into his seat and disappear forever. I surveyed Dagdon and Branna and smiled a bit. I can defend myself if it comes to that, I said to Tamlin.
The Daemati smiled back at me. I hadn't felt another touch on my mental barriers, or the ones I'd been working to keep around as many people here as possible.
The constant use of my power was wearing on me, however. Being away from this place for 4 or 5 days would be a welcomed relief. Especially as Ianthe murmured to Tamlin,
Perhaps you should go, my friend.
I waited. Waited for whatever nonsense was about to come out of that pouty mouth. You never know when the Night Court will attempt to snatch her away. I had a blink to debate my reaction, to opt for leaning back in my chair, shoulders curling inward, hauling up those images of Claire, of Rhys, with those ash arrows through his wings, any sort of way to dredge my scent in fear.
Have you news?
I whispered. Branna and Dagdon looked very interested at that. The priestess opened her mouth, but Jurian cut her off, drawling, There's no news.
Their borders are secure. Rhysand would be a fool to push his luck by coming here.
I stared at my plate, the portrait of bowed terror.
A fool, yes, Ianthe countered. But one with a vendetta.
She faced Tamlin, the morning sun catching in the jewel atop her head.
Perhaps if you returned to him his family's wings, he might settle.
For a heartbeat, silence rippled through me, followed by a wave of roaring that drowned out nearly every thought, every self-preserving instinct. I could barely hear over that bellowing in my blood, my bones. But the words, the offer, a cheap attempt at snaring me. I pretended not to hear, not to care, even as I waited and waited for Tamlin's reply. When Tamlin answered, his voice was low.
I burned them a long time ago.
I could have sworn there was something like remorse. Remorse and shame in his words.
Ianthe only tisked.
Too bad. He might have paid handsomely for them.
My limbs ached with the effort of not leaping over the table to smash her head into the marble floor. But I said to Tamlin, soothing and gentle, I'll be fine out there. I touched his hand, brushing my thumb over the back of his palm, held his stare. Let's not start down this road again. As I pulled away, Tamlin merely fixed Lucian with a look, any trace of that guilt gone. His claws slid free, embedding in the scar-flecked wood of his chair's arm. Be careful. None of us pretended it was anything but a threat. It was a 2-day ride, but took us only a day to get there with winnowing, walking, winnowing. We could manage a few miles at a time, but Dagden was slower than I'd anticipated, given that he had to carry his sister in Durian. I didn't fault him for it. With each of us bearing another, the drain was considerable. Lucian and I both bore a sentry, minor lord sons who had been trained to be polite and watchful. Supplies, as a result, were limited, including tents. By the time we made it to the cleft in the wall, darkness was falling. The few supplies we'd hauled also had encumbered our winnowing through the world, and I let the sentries erect the tents for us, ever the lady keen to be waited on. Our dinner around the small fire was near silent, none of us bothering to speak, save for Durian, who questioned the sentries endlessly about their training. The twins retreated to their own tent after they'd picked at the meat sandwiches we'd packed, frowning at them as if they were full of maggots instead, and Durian wandered off into the woods soon after, claiming he wanted a walk before he retired. I hauled myself into the canvas tent when the fire was dying out, the space barely big enough for Lucian and me to sleep shoulder to shoulder. His red hair gleamed in the faint firelight a moment later as he shoved through the flaps and swore.
Maybe I should sleep out there.
I rolled my eyes.
Please.
A wary, considering glance as he knelt and removed his books.
You know Tamlin can be sensitive about things.
He can also be a pain in my ass, I snapped, and slithered under the blankets. If you yield to him on every bit of paranoia and territorialism, you'll just make it worse. Lucian unbuttoned his jacket but remained mostly dressed as he slid into his sleeping roll.
I think it's made worse because you two haven't, you haven't, right?
I stiffened, tugging the blanket higher onto my shoulders. No, I don't want to be touched like that. Not for a while. His silence was heavy, sad. I hated the lie, hated it for how filthy it felt to wield it.
I'm sorry, he said.
And I wondered what else he was apologizing for as I faced him in the darkness of our tent. Is there some way to get out of this deal with Highburn? My words were barely louder than the murmuring embers outside. I'm back, I'm safe,
We could find some way around it.
No. The King of Highburn crafted his bargain with Tamlin too cleverly, too clearly. Magic bound them. Magic will strike him if he does not allow Highburn into these lands.
In what way? Kill him?
Lucian's sigh ruffled my hair. It will claim his own powers. Maybe kill him. Magic is all about balance. It's why he couldn't interfere with your bargain with Rhysand. Even the person who tries to sever the bargain faces consequences. If he'd kept you here, the magic that bound you to Rhys might have come to claim his life as a payment for yours. Or the life of someone else he cared about. It's old magic. Old and strange. It's why we avoid bargains unless it's necessary. Even the scholars at the Day Court don't know how it works. Believe me, I've asked.
For me? You asked them for me?
Yes. I went last winter to inquire about breaking your bargain with Rhys.
Why didn't you tell me?
We didn't want to give you false hope. And we didn't dare let Rhysand get wind of what we were doing in case he found a way to interfere, to stop it.
So Ianthe pushed Tamlin to Highburn instead.
He was frantic. The scholars at the Day Court worked too slowly. I begged him for more time, but you'd already been gone for months. He wanted to act, not wait. Despite that letter you sent. Because of that letter you sent. I finally told him to go ahead with it after that day in the forest.
I turned onto my back, staring at the sloped ceiling of the tent. How bad was it?
I asked quietly. You saw your room. He trashed it. The study, his bedroom, he killed the sentries who'd been on guard. After he got the last bit of information from them, he executed them in front of everyone in the manor.
My blood chilled. You didn't stop him.
I tried. I begged him for mercy. He didn't listen. He couldn't listen.
The sentries didn't try to stop him either?
They didn't dare. Feyre, he's a high lord. He's a different breed.
I wondered if he'd say the same thing if he knew what I was.
We were backed into a corner with no options, none. It was either go to war with the Night Court and Highburn, or ally with Highburn. Let them try to stir up trouble, and then use that alliance to our own advantage further down the road.
What do you mean? I breathed. But Lucian realized what he'd said and hedged.
We have enemies in every court. Having Highburn's alliance will make them think twice.
Liar. Trained, clever liar. I loosed a heaving, sleepy breath. Even if they're now our allies, I mumbled. I still hate them. A snort.
Me too. Get up.
Blinding sunlight cut into the tent, and I hissed. The order was drowned out by Lucian's snarl as he sat up.
Out, he ordered Jurian, who looked us over once, sneered, and stalked away.
I'd rolled onto Lucian's bedroll at some point. Any schemes indeed second to my most pressing demand, warmth. But I had no doubt Jurian would tuck away the information to throw in Tamlin's face when we returned. We'd shared a tent, and had been very cozy upon awakening. I washed in the nearby stream, my body stiff and aching from a night on the ground, with or without the help of a bedroll. Branna was prowling for the stream by the time I'd finished. The princess gave me a cold, thin smile.
I'd pick Baron's son, too.
I stared at the princess beneath lowered brows. She shrugged, her smile growing.
Autumn court males have fire in their blood, and they fuck like it, too.
I suppose you know from experience? A chuckle.
Why do you think I had so much fun in the war?
I didn't bother to hide my disgust. Lucian caught me cringing at him when her words replayed for the 10th time an hour later, while we hiked the half mile toward the crack in the wall.
What?
He demanded. I shook my head, trying not to imagine Elaine subject to that fire.
Nothing,
I said, as Jurian swore ahead. We were both moving at his barked curse, and then broke into a run at the sound of a sword whining free of its sheath. Leaves and branches whipped at me, but then we were at the wall, that invisible, horrible marker humming and throbbing in my head. And staring right at us, through the hole, were three children of the Blessed. Chapter 7. Branna and Dagden looked like they'd just found second breakfast waiting for them. Jurian had his sword out, the two young women and one young man gaping between him and the others, then at us, their eyes widening further as they noted Lucian's cruel beauty. They dropped to their knees.
Masters and mistresses,
they beseeched us, their silver jewelry glinting in the dappled sunlight through the leaves.
You have found us on our journey.
The two royals smiled so broadly, I could see all of their two white teeth. Jurian, for once, seemed torn before he snapped, What are you doing here? The dark-haired girl at the front was lovely. Her honey-gold skin flushed as she lifted her head.
We have come to dwell in the immortal lands. We have come as tribute.
Jurian cut cold, hard eyes to Lucian.
Is this true?
Lucian stared him down.
We accept no tribute from the human lands, least of all children.
Never mind that the three of them appeared only a few years younger than myself.
Why don't you come through?
Branna cooed.
And we can enjoy ourselves.
She was indeed sizing up the brown-haired young man and the other girl, her hair a ruddy brown, face sharp but interesting. From the way Dagden was leering at the beautiful girl in front, I knew he'd silently made his claim already. I shoved in front of them and said to the three mortals, Get out. Go back to your villages, back to your families. You cross this wall, and you will die. They balked, rising to their feet, faces taut with fear and awe.
We have come to live in peace.
There is no such thing here. There is only death for your kind. Their eyes slid to the immortals behind me. The dark-haired girl blushed at Dagden's intent stare, seeing the high fey beauty and none of the predator. So I struck. The wall was a screeching, terrible vice, crushing my magic, battering my head, but I speared my power through the gap and slammed into their minds. Too hard. The young man flinched a bit. So soft. Defenseless. Their minds yielded like butter melting on my tongue. I beheld pieces of their lives like shards on a broken mirror, flashing every which way. The dark-haired girl was rich, educated, headstrong, had wanted to escape an arranged marriage and believed Prithian was a better option. The ruddy-haired girl had known nothing but poverty and her father's fists, which had turned more violent after they'd ended her mother's life. The young man had sold himself on the streets of a large village until the children had come one day and offered him something better. I worked quickly, neatly. I was finished before three heartbeats had passed, before Branna had even drawn breath to say,
There is no death here, only pleasure, if you are willing.
Even if they weren't willing, I wanted to add. But the three of them now blinked, balking, beholding us for what we were, deadly, merciless. The truth behind the spun stories.
We, perhaps, have made a mistake,
their leader said, retreating a step.
Or perhaps this was fate,
Branna countered with a snake smile.
They kept backing away, kept seeing the histories I'd planted into their minds, that we were here to hurt and kill them, that we had done so with all their friends, that we'd use and discard them.
I showed them the Naga, the Bogey, the Midgard Worm. I showed them Claire and the Golden-Haired Queen skewered on that lamppost.
The memories I gave them became stories they had ignored, but now understood with us before them.
Come here, Dagdon ordered.
The words were kindling to their fear. The three of them turned, heavy pale robes twisting with them, and bolted for the trees. Branna tensed, as if she'd charged through the wall after them. But I gripped her arm and hissed, "If you pursue them, then you and I will have a problem." In emphasis, I dragged mental talons down her own shield. The princess snarled at me, but the humans were already gone. I prayed they'd listen to the other command I'd woven into their minds, to get on a boat, get as many friends as they could, and flee for the continent, to return here only when the war was over, and to warn as many humans as possible to get out before it was too late. The Highburn royals growled their displeasure, but I ignored it as I took up a spot against a tree and settled in to wait, not trusting them to stay on this side of the border. The royals resumed their work, stalking up and down the wall. A moment later, a male body came up beside mine. Not Lucien, I realized with a jolt, but did not so much as flinch. Jurian's eyes were on the place where the humans had been.
Thank you, he said, his voice rough.
I don't know what you're talking about, I replied, well aware that Lucien carefully watched from the shade of a nearby oak. Jurian gave me a knowing smirk and sauntered after Dagdon. They took all day. Whatever it was they were inspecting, whatever they were hunting for, the royals didn't inform us. And after the confrontation that morning, I knew pushing them into revealing it wouldn't happen. I'd used up my allotted tolerance for the day. So we spent another night in the woods, which was precisely how I wound up sitting across the fire from Jurian after the twins had crawled into their tent and the sentries had taken up their watch positions. Lucien had gone to the stream to get more water, and I watched the flame dance among the logs, feeling it echo inside myself. Spearing my power through the wall had left me with a lingering, pounding headache all day, more than a bit dizzy. I had no doubt sleep would claim me fast and hard, but the fire was too warm, and the spring night too brisk to willingly breach that long gap of darkness between the flame and my tent.
What happens to the ones who do make it through the wall?
Jurian asked, the hard pains of his face cast in flickering relief by the fire. I ground the heel of my boot into the grass. I don't know. They never came back once they went over. But while Amarantha ruled, creatures prowled these woods, so I don't think it ended well. I've never encountered a mention of them being at any court.
500 years ago? They'd have been flogged for that nonsense,
Jurian said.
We were their slaves and whores and laborers for millennia. Men and women fought and died so we'd never have to serve them again. Yet there they are in those costumes, unaware of the danger, the history.
Careful, or you might not sound like Highburn's faithful pet. A low, hateful laugh.
That's what you think I am, isn't it? His dog.
What's the end goal, then?
I have unfinished business.
Miriam is dead. That madness danced again, replacing the rare lucidity.
Everything I did during the war, it was for Miriam and me. For our people to survive and one day be free. And she left me for that pretty-faced prince the moment I put my people before her.
I heard she left you because you became so focused on wringing information from Clithia that you lost sight of the real conflict.
Miriam told me to go ahead and fuck her for information. Told me to seduce Clithia,
until she'd sold out all of Highburn and the Loyalists. She had no qualms with that, none.
So all of this is to get Miriam back?
He stretched his long legs before him, crossing one ankle over the other. It's to draw her out of her little nest with that winged prick and make her regret it.
You get a second shot at life, and that's what you wish to do? Revenge?
Jurian smiled slowly.
Isn't that what you're doing?
Months of working with Rhys had me remembering to furrow my brow in confusion.
Against Rhys, I would one day like it.
That's what they all say, when they pretend he's a sadistic murderer.
You forget I knew him in the war. You forget he risked his legion to save Miriam from our enemy's fort. That's how Amarantha captured him, you know. Rhys knew it was a trap. For Prince Draken. So Rhys went against orders and marched in his whole legion to get Miriam out. For his friend. For my lover. And for that bastard Draken's sake. Rhys sacrificed his legion in the process. Got all of them captured and tortured afterward. Yet everyone insists Rhysand is soulless, wicked. But the male I knew was the most decent of them all. Better than that prick prince. You don't lose that quality, no matter the centuries. And Rhys was too smart to do anything but have the vilification of his character be a calculated move. And yet, here you are. His mate. The most powerful High Lord in the world lost his mate and has not come to claim her, even when she's defenseless in the woods.
Jurian chuckled.
Perhaps that's because Rhysand has not lost you at all, but rather unleashed you upon us.
I had never heard that story, but it seemed so like my mate that I knew the flames between us now smoldered in my eyes as I said,
"You love to hear yourself talk, don't you?"
"Highburn will kill all of you," was all Jurian replied. Jurian wasn't wrong. Lucian woke me the next morning with a hand over my mouth, warning gleaming in his russet eye. I smelled it a moment later, the coppery tang of blood. We shoved into our clothes and boots, and I did a quick inventory of the weapons we'd squeezed into the tent with us. I had 3 daggers, Lucian had 2, as well as an elegant short sword. Better than nothing, but not much. A glance from him communicated our plan well enough. Play casual until we assessed the situation. I had a heartbeat to realize that this was perhaps the first time he and I had worked in tandem. Hunting had never been a joint effort, and under the mountain had been one of us looking out for the other. Never a team, a unit. Lucian slid from the tent, limbs loose and ready to shift into a defensive position. He'd been trained, he once told me, at the Autumn Court and at this one. Like Rhys, he usually opted for words to win his battles. But I'd seen him and Tamlin in the practice ring. He knew how to handle a weapon, how to kill if need be. I pushed past him, devouring the details of my surroundings as if I were a starving man at a feast. The forest was the same. Jurian was crouched before the fire, stirring the embers back to alertness, his face a hard, brooding mask. But the sentries. They were pale as Lucian stalked to them. I followed their shifting attention to the trees behind Jurian. No sign of the royals. The blood. The coppery tang, yes, but laced with earth and marrow and rot. Mortality. I stormed for the trees and dense brush. "You're too late," Jurian said as I passed him, still poking the embers. "They finished 2 hours ago." Lucian was on my heels as I shoved into the brambles, thorns tearing at my hands. The Highburn royals hadn't bothered to clean up their mess. From what was left of the 3 bodies, their shredded pale robes like fallen ashes through the small clearing, Dagdon and Branna
must have shut out their screams with some sort of shield. Lucian swore. They went through the wall last night to hunt them down. Even with hours separating them, the royals were fey, swift, immortal. The three children of the Blessed would have tired after running, would have camped somewhere. Blood was already drying on the grass, on the trunks of the surrounding trees. Highburn's brand of torture wasn't very creative. Claire, the Golden Queen, and these three, a similar mutilating and torment. I unfastened my cloak and carefully laid it over the biggest remains of them I could find. The torso of the young man, clawed up and bloodless. His face was still etched in pain. Flame heated at my fingertips, begging me to burn them, to give them at least that sort of burial, but... Do you think it was for sport? Or to send us a message? Lucian laid his own cloak across the remains of the two young women. His face was as serious as I'd ever seen it. I think they aren't accustomed to being denied. I'd call this an immortal temper tantrum. I closed my eyes, trying to calm my roiling stomach. You aren't to blame, he added. They could have killed them out in the mortal lands, but they brought them here to make a statement about their power. He was right. The children of the Blessed would have been dead even if I hadn't interfered. They're threatened, I mused, and proud to a fault. I towed the blood-soaked grass. Do we bury them? Lucian considered. It sends a message that we're willing to clean up their messes. I surveyed the clearing again, considered everything at stake. Then we send another sort of message. Chapter 8. Tamlin paced in front of the hearth in his study, every turn as sharp as a blade. They are our allies, he growled at me, at Lucian, both of us seated in armchairs flanking the mantel. They're monsters, I countered. They butchered three innocents. And you should have left it alone for me to deal with. Tamlin heaved a jagged breath. Not retaliated like children. He threw a glare in Lucian's direction. I expected better from you. But not from me? I asked quietly. Tamlin's green eyes were like frozen jade. You have a personal connection to those people. He does not. That's the sort of thinking, I snapped, clutching the armrests, that has allowed for a wall to be the only solution between our two peoples, for the Fae to look at these sorts of murders and not care. I knew the guards outside could hear, knew anyone walking by could hear. The loss of any life on either side is a personal connection. Or is it only high fey lives that matter to you? Tamlin stopped short and snarled at Lucian. Get out. I'll deal with you later. Don't you talk to him like that, I hissed, shooting to my feet. You have jeopardized this alliance with that stunt you two pulled. Good, they can burn in hell for all I care, I shouted. Lucian flinched. You sent the bogey after them, Tamlin roared. I didn't so much as blink, and I knew the sentries had heard indeed by the cough of one outside, a sound of muffled shock. And I made sure those sentries could still hear as I said, They terrorized those humans, made them suffer. I figured the bogey was one of the few creatures that could return the favor. Lucian had tracked it down, and we'd lured it, carefully, over hours, back to that camp, right to where Dagdon and Branna had been gloating over their kill. They'd managed to get away, but only after what had sounded like a good bit of screaming and fighting. Their faces remained bloodless even hours later, their eyes still brimming with hate whenever they deigned to look at us. Lucian cleared his throat. Stood as well.
Tam, those humans were barely more than children. Feyre gave the royals an order to stand down. They ignored it. If we let Hybern walk all over us, we stand to lose more than their alliance. The bogey reminded them that we aren't without our claws, too.
Tamlin didn't take his eyes off me as he said to Lucian, "Get out." There was enough violence in the words that neither Lucian nor I objected this time as he slipped from the room and shut the double doors behind him. I speared my power into the hall, sensing him sitting on the foot of the stairs, listening, as the six sentries in the hall were listening. I said to Tamlin, my back ramrod straight, "You don't get to speak to me like that. You promised you wouldn't act this way. You have no idea what's at risk. Don't you talk down to me. Not after what I went through to get back here to you, to our people. You think any of us are happy to be working with Hybern? You think I don't see it in their faces? The question of whether I am worth the dishonor of it?" His breathing turned ragged again. Good. I wanted to urge him. Good. "You sold us out to get me back," I said, low and cold. "You whored us out to Hybern. Forgive me if I am now trying to regain some of what we lost." Claws slid free. A feral growl rippled out of him. "They hunted down and butchered those humans for sport," I went on. "You might be willing to get on your knees for Hybern, but I certainly am not." He exploded. Furniture splintered and went flying, windows cracked and shattered, and this time, I did not shield myself. The work table slammed into me, throwing me against the bookshelf, and every place where flesh and bone met wood barked and ached. My knees slammed into the carpeted floor, and Tamlin was instantly in front of me, hands shaking. The doors burst open. "What have you done?" Lucian breathed, and Tamlin's face was the picture of devastation as Lucian shoved him aside. He let Lucian shove him aside and help me stand. Something wet and warm slid down my cheek, blood from the scent of it. "Let's get you cleaned up," Lucian said, an arm around my shoulders as he eased me from the room. I barely heard him over the ringing in my ears, the slight spinning to the world. The sentries, Braun and Hart, two of Tamlin's favorite lord warriors among them, were gaping, attention torn between the wrecked study and my face. With good reason. As Lucian led me past a gilded hall mirror, I beheld what had drawn such horror. My eyes were glassy, my face pallid, save for the scratch just beneath my cheekbone, perhaps 2 inches long and leaking blood. Little scratches peppered my neck, my hands, but I willed that cleansing, healing power, that of the High Lord of Dawn, to keep from seeking them out, from smoothing them away.
"Feyre," Tamlin breathed from behind us.
I halted, aware of every eye that watched. "I'm fine," I whispered. "I'm sorry." I wiped at the blood dribbling down my cheek. "I'm fine," I told him again. No one, not even Tamlin, looked convinced. And if I could have painted that moment, I would have named it A Portrait in Snares and Baiting. Rhysand sent word down the bond the second I was soaking in the bathtub. "Are you hurt?" The question was faint, the bond quieter and tenser than it had been days ago. "Sore but fine, nothing I can't handle." Though my injuries still lingered, and showed no signs of a speedy healing.
Perhaps I'd been too good at keeping those healing powers at bay. The reply was a long time coming. Then it came all at once, as if he wanted to cram every word in before the difficulty of the distance silenced us.
I know better than to tell you to be careful or to come home, but I want you home, soon, and I want him dead for putting a hand on you.
Even with the entirety of the land between us, his rage rippled down the bond. I answered, my tone soothing, dry. Technically, his magic touched me, not his hand. The bath water was cold by the time his reply came through.
I'm glad you have a sense of humor about this. I certainly don't.
I sent back an image of me sticking out my tongue at him. My clothes were back on when his answer arrived. Like mine, it was wordless, a mere image. Like mine, Rhysand's tongue was out. But it was occupied with doing something else. I made a point to take a ride the next day, made sure it was when Braun and Hart were on duty, and asked them to escort me. They didn't say much, but I felt their assessing glances at my every wince as we rode the worn paths through the spring wood, felt them study the cut on my face, the bruises beneath my clothes that had me hissing every now and then. Still not fully healed, to my surprise, though I suppose it worked to my advantage. Tamlin had begged my forgiveness at dinner yesterday, and I'd given it to him. But Lucian hadn't spoken to him all evening. Jurian and the Highburn Royals had sulked at the delay after I'd quietly admitted my bruises made it too difficult to accompany them to the wall. Tamlin hadn't possessed the nerve to suggest they go without me, to rob me of that duty. Not when he saw the purplish markings, and knew that if they were on a human, I might have been dead.
And the royals, after Lucian and I had sent the bogey's invisible malice after them, had backed off.
For now. I kept my shields up, around myself and the others, the strain now a constant headache that had any extra sort of magic feeling feeble and thin. The reprieve on the border hadn't done much. No, it had made the strain worse after I'd sent my power through the wall. I'd invited Ianthe to the house, subtly requesting her comforting presence. She arrived knowing the full details of what had transpired in that study, letting it conveniently slip that Tamlin had confessed it to her, pleading for absolution from the mother and cauldron and whoever else. I prattled about my own forgiveness to her that evening, and made a show of taking her good counsel, telling the courtiers and others at our crowded table that night how lucky we were to have Tamlin and Ianthe guarding our lands. Honestly, I don't know how none of them connected it, how none of them saw my words as not a strange coincidence, but a dare, a threat. That last little nudge.
Especially when seven Naga broke into the estate grounds, just past midnight.
They were dispatched before they reached the house, an attack halted by a cauldron-sent warning vision from none other than Ianthe herself. The chaos and screaming woke the estate. I remained in my room, guards beneath my windows and outside my door. Tamlin himself, blood-drenched and panting, came to inform me that the grounds were again secure.
That the Naga had been found with the keys to the gate, and the sentry who had lost them would be dealt with in the morning.
A final show of power from a tribe that had not gone gently after Amarantha's reign. All of us saved from further harm by Ianthe. We all gathered outside the barracks the next morning. Lucian's face, pallid and drawn, purple smudges beneath his glazed eyes. He hadn't returned to his room last night. Beside me, the Highburn Royals and Jurian were silent and grim, as Tamlin paced before the sentry strung up between two posts.
You were entrusted with guarding this estate and its people,
Tamlin said to the shuddering male, already stripped down to his pants.
You were found not only asleep
at the gate last night, but it was your set of keys that originally went missing.
Tamlin snarled softly.
Do you deny this?
I never fall asleep. It's never happened until now. I must have just nodded off for a minute or two.
The sentry stammered, the ropes restraining him groaning as he strained against them.
You jeopardized the lives of everyone in this manner.
And it could not go unpunished. Not with the Highburn royals here, seeking any sign of weakness.
Tamlin held out a hand. Braun, stone-faced, approached to give him a whip. All the sentries, his most trusted warriors, shifted about. Some outright glaring at Tamlin, some trying not to watch what was about to unfold. I grabbed Lucian's hand. It wasn't entirely for show. Ianthe stepped forward, hands folded over her stomach.
20 lashes. And one more. For the cauldron's forgiveness.
The guards turned baleful eyes toward her now. Tamlin unfurled the whip into the dirt. I made my move, slid my power into the bound sentry's mind, and freed the memory I'd coiled up tightly in his head. Freed his tongue, too.
It was her, he panted, jerking his chin to Ianthe. She took the keys.
Tamlin blinked, and everyone in that courtyard looked right to Ianthe. Her face didn't so much as flinch at the accusation, the truth he'd flung her way. I'd been waiting to see how she'd counter my showing of power at the solstice, tracking her movements that entire day and night. Within moments of my leaving the party, she'd gone to the barracks, used some glimmer of power to lull him to sleep, and taken his keys.
Then planted her warnings about the Naga's impending attacks.
After, she gave the creatures the keys to the gates. So she could sound the alarm last night. So she could save us from a real threat. Clever idea. Had it not played right into everything I'd laid out.
Ianthe said smoothly, Why should I take the keys? I warned you of the attack.
You were at the barracks. I saw you that night, the sentry insisted, then turning pleading eyes to Tamlin. It wasn't fear of pain that propelled him, I realized. No, the lashings would have been deserved and earned and borne well. It was the fear of honor lost.
I would have thought one of your sentries, Tamlin, would have more dignity than to spread lies to spare himself from some fleeting pain.
Ianthe's face remained serene as always. Tamlin, to his credit, studied the sentry for a long moment. I stepped forward.
I will hear his story.
Some of the guards loosed sighs. Some looked at me with pity and affection. Ianthe lifted her chin.
With all due respect, m'lady, it is not your judgment to make.
And there it was, the attempt to knock me down a few pegs. Just because it would make her see red, I ignored her completely and said to the sentry, I will hear your story. I kept my focus on him, even as I counted my breaths, even as I prayed that Ianthe would take the bait.
You'll take the word of a sentry? Over that of a high priestess?
My disgust at her blurted words wasn't entirely feigned, even though hiding my faint smile was an effort. The guards shifted on their feet at the insult, the tone. Even if they had not already trusted their fellow sentry, from her words alone, they realized her guilt. I looked to Tamlin then, saw his eyes sharpen as well, with understanding. Too many protests from Ianthe.
Oh, he was well aware that Ianthe had perhaps planned that Naga attack to reclaim some shred of power and influence as a savior of these people. Tamlin's mouth tightened in disapproval.
I'd given them both a length of rope.
I supposed now would be the moment to see whether they'd hang themselves with it.
I dared one more step forward, upturning my palms to Tamlin.
Perhaps it was a mistake. Don't take it from his hide or his honor. Let's hear him out.
Tamlin's eyes softened a fraction. He remained silent, considering. But behind me, Branna snorted.
Pathetic,
she murmured, though everyone could hear it. Weak. Vulnerable. Ripe for conquest. I saw the word slam through Tamlin's face, as if they were shutting doors in their wake. There was no other interpretation. Not for Tamlin. But Ianthe assessed me. Standing before the crowd, the influence I'd made so very clear I was capable of stealing. If she admitted guilt, whatever she had left would come crumbling down. Tamlin opened his mouth, but Ianthe cut him off.
There are laws to be obeyed, she told me, gently enough that I wanted to drag my nails down her face. Traditions. He has broken our trust, has let our blood be spilled for his carelessness. Now he seeks to accuse a high priestess of his failings. It cannot go unpunished.
She nodded to Tamlin.
21 lashes, High Lord.
I glanced between them, my mouth going dry. Please, just listen to him. The guard hanging between the posts had such hope and gratitude in his eyes. In this, my revenge edged towards something oily, something foreign and queasy. He would heal from the pain, but the blow to his honor. It'd take a little piece out of mine as well. Tamlin stared at me, then Ianthe, then glanced to the smirking Highburn royals, to Jurian, who crossed his arms, his face unreadable. And like I'd gambled, his need for control, for strength, won out. Ianthe was too important an ally to risk isolating. The word of a low sentry. No, it did not matter as much as hers. Tamlin turned to the sentry tied to the posts. Put the bit in, he quietly ordered Bronn. There was a heartbeat of hesitation from Bronn, as if the shock of Tamlin's order had rippled through him, through all the guards, siding with Ianthe, over them, his sentries. Who had gone over the wall again and again to try to break that curse for him, who had gladly done it, gladly died, hunted down as those wolves for him. And the wolf Eidfeld, Andres, he'd gone willingly too. Tamlin had sent them all over, and not all of them had come back. They had gone willingly, yet this was his thanks, his gratitude, his trust. But Bronn did as commanded, sliding the small piece of wood into the now trembling sentry's mouth. Judging by the barely concealed disdain in the guards' faces, at least they were aware of what had occurred, or what they believed had occurred. The High Priestess had orchestrated this entire attack to cast herself as a savior, offering up the reputation of one of their own as the asking price. They had no idea, none, that I'd goaded her into it, pushed and pushed her to reveal just what a snake she was, how little anyone without a title meant to her, how Tamlin listened to her without question, to a fault. It wasn't much of an act when I put a hand to my throat, backing up a step, then another, until Lucian's warmth was against me, and I leaned fully into him. The sentries were sizing up Ianthe, the royals. Tamlin had always been one of them, fought for them. Until now. Until Highburn. Until he put these foreign monsters before them. Until he put a scheming high priestess before them. Tamlin's eyes were on us, on the hand Lucian put on my arm to steady me as he drew back the whip. The thunderous crack as it cleaved the air snapped through the barracks, the estate, through the very foundations of the court. Chapter 9. Ianthe wasn't done. I knew it, braced myself for it. She didn't flit back to her temple a few miles away. Rather, she remained at the house, seizing her chance to worm her way closer to Tamlin. She believed she'd gained a foothold, that her declaration of justice served at the bloody end of the whipping hadn't been anything but a final slap in the face to the guards who watched. And when that sentry had sagged from his bindings, when the others came to gently untie him, Ianthe merely ushered the Highburn party and Tamlin into the manor for lunch. But I'd remained at the barracks, tending to the groaning sentry, drawing away bloodied bowls of water while the healer quietly patched him up. Braun and Hart personally escorted me back to the estate hours later. I thanked each by name, then apologized that I hadn't been able to prevent it, Ianthe's scheming or the unjust punishment of their friend. I meant every word. The crack of the whip was still echoing in my ears. Then they spoke the words I'd been waiting for. They were sorry they hadn't stopped any of it either. Not just today, but the bruises now fading at last, the other incidents. If I had asked them, they would have handed me their own knives to slit their throats. The next evening, I was hurrying back to my room to change for dinner when Ianthe made her next move. She was to come with us to the wall tomorrow morning. Her and Tamlin, too. If we were all to be a united front, she'd declared over dinner, then she wished to see the wall herself. The Highburn royals didn't care, but Jurian winked at me, as if he, too, saw the game in motion. I packed my own bags that night. Alice entered right before bed, a third pack in her hands. Since it's a longer trip, I brought you supplies. Even with Tamlin joining us, it was too many people for him to winnow us directly. So we'd go, as we'd done before, in segments, a few miles at a time. Alice laid the pack she'd prepared beside my own, picked up the brush on the vanity, and beckoned me to sit on the cushioned bench before it. I obeyed. For a few minutes, she brushed my hair in silence. Then she said, "When you leave tomorrow, I leave too." I lifted my eyes to hers in the mirror. "My nephews are packed, the ponies ready to take us back to summer court territory at last. It's been too long since I saw my home," she said, though her eyes shone. "I know the feeling," was all I said. "I wish you well, lady," Alice said, setting down the brush and beginning to braid back my hair. "For the rest of your days, however long they may be, I wish you well." I let her finish the plait, then pivoted on the bench and gripped her thin fingers in mine. "Don't ever tell Tarquin you know me well," I said quietly. Her brows rose. "There is a blood ruby with my name on it," I clarified. Even her tree bark skin seemed to blanch. She understood it well enough. I was a hunted enemy of the summer court. Only my death would be accepted as payment for my crimes. Alice squeezed my hand. "Blood rubies or no, you will always have one friend in the summer court." My throat bobbed. "And you will always have one in mine," I promised her. She knew which court I meant, and did not look afraid. The sentries did not glance at Tamlin, or so much as speak to him unless absolutely necessary. Braun, Hart, and three others were to join us. They'd spotted me checking on their friend before dawn, a courtesy I knew none of the others had extended. Winnowing felt like wading through mud. In fact, my powers had become more of a burden than a help. I had a throbbing headache by noon, and spent the last leg of the journey dizzy and disoriented as we winnowed again and again. We arrived and set up camp in near silence. I quietly, shyly asked to share a tent with Ianthe instead of Tamlin, appearing eager to mend the rift the whipping had torn between us. But I did it more to spare Lucian from her attention than to keep Tamlin at bay. Dinner was made and eaten, bedrolls laid out, and Tamlin ordered Brawn and Hart on the first watch. Lying beside Ianthe without slitting her throat was an exercise in patience and control. But whenever the knife beneath my pillow seemed to whisper her name, I'd remind myself of my friends, the family that was alive, healing in the north. I repeated their names silently, over and over into the darkness. Rhysand, Moor, Cassian, Amryn, Azriel, Elaine, Nesta. I thought of how I had last seen them, so bloodied and hurting. Thought of Cassian's screams as his wings were shredded. Of Azriel's threat to the king as he advanced on Moor. Nesta, fighting every step toward the cauldron. My goal was bigger than revenge. My purpose greater than personal retribution. Dawn broke, and I found my palm curled around the hilt of my knife anyway. I drew it out as I sat up, staring down at the sleeping priestess. The smooth column of her neck seemed to glow in the early morning sun leaking in through the tent flaps. I weighed the knife in my hand. I wasn't sure I'd been born with the ability to forgive. Not for terrors inflicted on those I loved. For myself, I didn't care. Not nearly as much. But there was some fundamental pillar of steel in me that could not bend or break in this. Could not stomach the idea of letting these people get away with what they'd done. Ianthe's eyes opened. The teal as limpid as her discarded circlet. They went right to the knife in my hand. Then to my face. You can't be too careful while sharing a camp with enemies, I said. I could have sworn something like fear shone in her eyes. Highburn is not our enemy, she said, a bit breathlessly. From her paleness as I left the tent, I knew my answering smile had done its job well. Lucian and Tamlin showed the twins where the crack in the wall lay. And as they had the first two times, they spent hours surveying it. The surrounding land. I kept close this time, watching them, my presence now deemed relatively unthreatening, if not a nuisance. We'd played our little power games, established I could bite if I wished, but we'd tolerate each other.
Here, Branna murmured to Dagdan, jerking her chin to the invisible divider.
The only markings were the different trees. On our side, they were bright, fresh, green of spring. On the other, they were dark, broad, curling slightly with heat. The height of summer.
The first one was better,
Dagdan countered. I sat atop a small boulder, peeling an apple with a paring knife.
Closer to the western coast, too,
he added to his twin.
This is closer to the continent, to the strait.
I sliced deep into the flesh of the apple, carving out a hunk of white meat for myself.
Yes, but we'd have more access to the High Lord's supplies.
Said High Lord was currently off with Jurian, hunting for food more filling than the sandwiches we'd packed. Ianthe had gone to a nearby spring to pray, and I had no idea whatsoever where Lucian or the sentries were. Good. Easier for me as I shoved the apple slice into my mouth and said around it,
I say go for this one.
They twisted toward me, Branna sneering and Dagdan's brows high.
What do you know of any of it? Branna demanded.
I shrugged, cutting another piece of apple.
You two talk louder than you realize.
shared accusatory glares between them. Proud, arrogant, cruel. I'd been taking their measure this fortnight.
Unless you want to risk the other courts having time to rally and intercepting you before you can cross to the Strait, I'd pick this one.
Branna rolled her eyes. I went on, rambling and bored.
But what do I know? You two have squatted on a little island for 500 years. Clearly you know more about Prithian and moving armies than me.
Branna hissed.
This is not about armies, so I will trust you to keep that mouth shut until we have use for you.
I snorted.
You mean to tell me all of this nonsense hasn't been to find a place to break through the wall and use the cauldron to also transport the mass of your armies here?
She laughed, low and cold.
The cauldron is not for transporting grunt armies. It is for remaking worlds. It's for bringing down this hideous wall and reclaiming what we were.
I merely crossed my legs.
I'd think that with an army of 10,000, you wouldn't need any magical objects to do your dirty work.
Our army is 10 times that, girl,
Branna sneered.
And twice that number if you count our allies in Valahan, Montessere, and Rask.
200,000. Mother save us.
You've certainly been busy all these years.
I surveyed them, utterly nonplussed.
Why not strike when Amarantha had the island?
The king had not yet found the cauldron, despite years of searching. It served his purposes to let her be an experiment for how we might break these people, and served as good motivation for our allies on the continent to join us, knowing what would await them.
I finished off my apple and chucked the core into the woods. They watched it fly like two hounds tracking a pheasant.
So, they're all going to converge here? I'm supposed to play hostess to so many soldiers?
Our own force will take care of Prithian before uniting with the others. Our commanders are preparing for it as we speak.
You must think you stand a shot at losing if you're bothering to use the cauldron to help you win.
The cauldron is victory. It will wipe this world clean again.
I lifted my eyes in irreverent cynicism.
And you need this exact spot to unleash it?
This exact spot, Dagdon said, a hand on the hilt of his sword, exists because a person or object of mighty power passed through it.
The cauldron will study the work they've already done and magnify it until the wall collapses entirely. It is a careful, complex process, and one I doubt your mortal mind can grasp.
Probably, though this mortal mind did manage to solve Amarantha's riddle and destroy her.
Branna merely turned back to the wall.
Why do you think Highburn let her live for so long in these lands? Better to have someone else to do his dirty work.
I had what I needed. Tamlin and Jurian were still off hunting. The royals were preoccupied, and I'd sent the sentries to get me more water, claiming that some of my bruises still ached a bit, and I wanted to make a poultice for them.
They'd looked positively murderous at that. Not at me, but at who had given me those bruises, who had picked Ianthe over them, and Highburn over their honor and people.
I brought 3 packs, but I'd only need one. The one I'd carefully repacked with Alice's new supplies, now tucked beside everything I'd anticipated needing to get clear of them and go. The one I'd brought with me on every trip out to the wall just in case. And now. I had numbers. I had a purpose. I had a specific location. And the names of foreign territories. But more than that, I had a people who had lost their faith in their high priestess. I had sentries who were beginning to rebel against their High Lord. And as a result of those things, I had Highburn royals doubting the strength of their allies here. I'd primed this court to fall. Not from outside forces, but its own internal warring. And I had to be clear of it before it happened. Before the last sliver of my plan fell into place. The party would return without me. And to maintain that illusion of strength, Tamlin and Ianthe would lie about it. Where I'd gone. And perhaps a day or two after that, one of these sentries would reveal the news. A carefully sprung trap that I'd coiled into his mind like one of my snares. I'd fled for my life, after being nearly killed by the Highburn prince and princess. I'd planted images in his head of my brutalized body, the markings consistent with what Dagdon and Branna had already revealed to be their style. He'd describe them in detail. Describe how he helped me get away before it was too late. How I ran for my life when Tamlin and Ianthe refused to intervene, to risk their alliance with Highburn. And when the sentry revealed the truth, no longer able to stomach keeping quiet when he saw how my sorry fate was concealed by Tamlin and Ianthe, just as Tamlin had sided with Ianthe the day he'd flogged that sentry. When he described what Highburn had done to me, their cursebreaker, their newly anointed cauldron blessed, before I'd fled for my life? There would be no further alliance. For there would be no sentry or denizen of this court who would stand with Tamlin or Ianthe after this. After me. I ducked into my tent to grab my pack, my steps light and swift. Listening, barely breathing, I scanned the camp, the woods. A few seconds extra had me snatching Tamlin's bandolier of knives from where he'd left them inside his tent. They'd get in the way while using a bow and arrow, he'd explained that morning. Their weight was considerable as I slung it across my chest. Illyrian fighting knives. Home. I was going home. I didn't bother to look back at the camp as I slipped into the northern tree line. If I winnowed without stopping between leaps, I'd be at the foothills in an hour, and would vanish through one of the caves not long after that. I made it about 100 yards into the cover of the trees before I halted. I heard Lucian first.
Back off.
A low female laugh. Everything in me went still and cold at that sound. I'd heard it once before, in Rhysand's memory. Keep going. They were distracted, horrible as it was. Keep going, keep going, keep going.
I thought you'd seek me out after the rite,
Ianthe purred. They couldn't be more than 30 feet through the trees, far enough away not to hear my presence, if I was quiet enough.
I was obligated to perform the rite, Lucian snapped. That night wasn't the product of desire, believe me.
We had fun, you and I.
I'm a mated male now.
Every second was the ringing of my death knell. I'd primed everything to fall. I'd long since stopped feeling any sort of guilt or doubt about my plan, not with Alice now safely away. And yet...
You don't act that way with Feyre.
A silk-wrapped threat.
You're mistaken.
Am I?
Twigs and leaves crunched, as if she was circling him.
You put your hands all over her.
I had done my job too well. Provoked her jealousy too much with every instance I'd found ways to get him to touch me in her presence. In Tamlin's presence.
Do not touch me.
He growled. And then, I was moving. I masked the sound of my footfalls, silent as a panther as I stalked to the little clearing where they stood, where Lucian stood, back against a tree, twin bands of blue stone shackled around his wrists. I'd seen them before. On Rhys, to immobilize his power. Stone hewn from Highburn's rotted land, capable of nullifying magic. And in this case, holding Lucian against that tree as Ianthe surveyed him like a snake before a meal. She slid a hand over the broad panes of his chest, his stomach, and Lucian's eyes shot to me as I stepped between the trees, fear and humiliation reddening his golden skin. "That's enough," I said. Ianthe whipped her head to me. Her smile was innocent, simpering. But I saw her note the pack, Tamlin's bandolier, dismiss them.
"We were in the middle of a game, weren't we, Lucian?"
He didn't answer. And the sight of those shackles on him, however she'd trapped him, and the sight of her hand still on his stomach.
"We'll return to the camp when we're done," she said,
turning to him. Her hand slid lower, not for his own pleasure, but simply to throw it in my face that she could. I struck. Not with my knives or magic, but my mind. I ripped down the shield I'd kept up around her to avoid the twins' control and slammed myself into her consciousness. A mask over a face of decay. That's what it was like to go inside that beautiful head and find such hideous thoughts inside it. A trail of males she'd used her power on or outright forced to bed, convinced of her entitlement to them. I pulled back against the tug of those memories, mastering myself.
"Take your hands off him."
She did. "Unshackle him." Lucian's skin drained of color as Ianthe obeyed me, her face queerly vacant, pliant. The blue stone shackles thumped to the mossy ground. Lucian's shirt was askew, the top button on his pants already undone. The roaring that filled my mind was so loud I could barely hear myself as I said,
"Pick up that rock."
Lucian remained pressed against that tree, and he watched in silence as Ianthe stooped to pick up a gray, rough rock about the size of an apple.
"Put your right hand on that boulder."
She obeyed, though a tremor went down her spine. Her mind thrashed and struggled against me like a fish snared on a line. I dug my mental talons in deeper, and some inner voice of hers began screaming. "Smash your hand with the rock as hard as you can until I tell you to stop." The hand she'd put on him, on so many others. Ianthe brought the stone up. The first impact was a muffled, wet thud. The second was an actual crack. The third drew blood. Her arm rose and fell, her body shuddering with the agony. And I said to her, very clearly, "You will never touch another person against their will. You will never convince yourself that they truly want your advances, that they're playing games. You will never know another's touch unless they initiate, unless it's desired by both sides." Thwack. Crack. Thud. "You will not remember what happened here. You will tell the others that you fell." Her ring finger had shifted in the wrong direction. "You are allowed to see a healer to set the bones, but not to erase the scarring. And every time you look at that hand, you're going to remember that touching people against their will has consequences, and if you do it again, everything you are will cease to exist. You will live with that terror every day and never know where it originates, only the fear of something chasing you, hunting you, waiting for you the instant you let your guard down." Silent tears of pain flowed down her face. "You can stop now." The bloodied rock tumbled onto the grass. Her hand was little more than cracked bones wrapped in shredded skin. "Kneel here until someone finds you." Ianthe fell to her knees, her ruined hand leaking blood onto her pale robes. "I debated slitting your throat this morning," I told her. I debated it all last night while you slept beside me.
I've debated it every single day since I learned you sold out my sisters to Highburn.
I smiled a bit.
But I think this is a better punishment.
And I hope you live a long, long life, Ianthe, and never know a moment's peace.
I stared down at her for a moment longer, tying off the tapestry of words and commands I'd woven into her mind, and turned to Lucian. He'd fixed his pants, his shirt. His wide eyes slid from her to me, then to the bloodied stone.
"The word you're looking for, Lucian," crooned a deceptively light female voice, "is Daemari."
We whirled toward Branna and Dagdan as they stepped into the clearing, grinning like wolves. Chapter 10. Branna ran her fingers through Ianthe's golden hair, clicking her tongue at the bloodied pulp cradled in her lap.
"Going somewhere, Farah?"
I let my mask drop. "I have places to be," I told the Highburn royals, noting the flanking positions they were too casually establishing around me.
"What could be more important than assisting us? You are, after all, sworn to assist our king."
Time. Biding their time until Tamlin returned from hunting with Jurian. Lucian shoved off the tree but didn't come up to my side. Something like agony flickered across his face as he finally noted the stolen bandolier, the pack on my shoulders. "I have no allegiance to you," I told Branna, even as Dagdan began to edge past my line of sight. "I am a free person, allowed to go where and when I will it."
"Are you?"
Branna mused, sliding a hand to her sword at her hip. I pivoted slightly to keep Dagdan from slipping into my blind spot.
"Such careful plotting these weeks. Such skilled maneuvering. You didn't seem to worry that we'd be doing the same."
They weren't letting Lucian leave this clearing alive. Or at least, not with his mind intact. He seemed to realize it at the same moment I did, understanding that there was no way they'd reveal this without knowing they'd get away with it. "Take the Spring Court," I said, and meant it. "It's going to fall one way or another." Lucian snarled. I ignored him.
"Oh, we intend to," Branna said, sword inching free of its dark sheath. "But then there's the matter of you."
I thumbed free two of the Illyrian fighting knives.
"Haven't you wondered at all the headaches? How things seem a little muffled on certain mental bonds?"
My powers had tired so swiftly, had become weaker and weaker these weeks. Dagdan snorted and finally observed to his sister,
"I'd give her about 10 minutes before the apple sets in."
Branna chuckled, towing the blue stone shackle.
"We gave the priestess the powder first. Crushed Fabane stone, ground so fine you couldn't see or scent or taste it in your food. She'd add a little at a time. Nothing suspicious. Not too much, lest it stifle all your powers at once."
Unease began to clench my gut.
"We've been Daemari for 1,000 years, girl,"
Dagdan sneered.
"But we didn't even need to slip into her mind.